You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists from all over the world. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. Please search for Fakeologist Audio Chat and Fakeologist Main Show on your favorite podcast app. To listen to the live stream, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. Now, on with the audio chat.
Rachel, are your headphones in? Are they proper?
The audio sounds all right. How come we're recording?
I don't know, you know, because I thought, why not? Because nobody records anything lately, so I thought, maybe we should freaking record something. What's the difference, you know?
Right? The new headphones, I think, are sound a bit tinny.
They are a bit tinny.
Yeah.
A bit mannish.
I somehow managed to snap me of ones, which is a pity because they sounded quite nice.
They did. They sounded really good. I thought you had some professional headphones or something, because you sounded really good.
They were call center ones. They were just what was going second-hand. Like, so these are second-hand as well. It's just because I buy second-hand things, you know, off people who are selling them rather than businesses.
a gypsy are you? A Roma traveler.
It's just one of the, it's the lifestyle, isn't it? I don't know.
I think it's cool. So you had like a headset with a little thing that went from one ear toward your mouth. Is that kind of thing?
Yeah. So I've got it. Yeah, it's two of them. I don't suppose this is particularly interesting for the stream of people.
Whatever. Who cares? They'll be okay. They went from having nothing to having something, so they'll be okay.
So what was your interest in recording?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I just wanted to. I just wasn't interested in the other chat at all. Personally, you know. And I thought, well, maybe somebody else would do, you know. I saw you were on mute, so I thought, well, let's see if you want to talk. I thought we could talk about the mask and stuff some more. I thought that stuff was cool.
You know, the mask.
Those kinds of ideas, you know.
So,
I mean, there's a lot to jump into right then, but like, yeah. You know, kind of like building up to that. Those kind of overarching themes, maybe. That makes sense.
Yeah. I'm no good at starting conversations. I'm better.
Well, it's fucking hard, right? It's like, okay, give me everything you got. You go. Just go. No, but, what was I going to say? I feel like I haven't talked to you guys forever, but today I didn't have to give the guy I was riding back and give him a ride home.
That other conversation sort of like flunked me because of whatever the line of thought that I was having before that started. I don't know. I've lost it.
When you went over there, you lost it, you mean?
Yeah, we were talking about. I suppose that's the thing with the flat Earth discussion is it's sort of like just. It sucks
the oxygen out of the room, you know. It devolves quickly. But,
yeah.
You know, I think the ideas about the mask and stuff are like about masks and like the dramatis persona and stuff, like the ideas of like it's really just the same. It's in the same wheelhouse as everything we look at and talk about, really. Insofar as it's like challenging preset positions, like the idea that we believe that someone is what we believe them to be, based really on nothing except for our own kind of belief that that's who it is, you know?
Yeah.
Like
continuity. Our mind smooths over continuity, you know, like so. But you just have to be shown one thing, and you just need to be shown another. and they don't need to be connected. There can be something small that connects the two, but then as soon as we link it, it doesn't have to be a link. But, I mean, back to Paul McCartney. The thing that interested me about the Paul McCartney thing is more the idea of, like, Singing in the Rain, that you could have... you could have a lookalike who took part of the role. The audience was always the same person. But the visual... I mean, you could do it with him, but it could be the whole of the band. It could be the Rolling Stones. I mean, they do that in movies all the time. They get other people in to do back shots and things from. And your mind just
fills in the blanks. It makes associations and fills in the blanks and
makes it all makes sense.
Right. Yeah. You're gonna perceive it as like one. It's really about perception. Tell me if my voice is terrible too, if you wouldn't. Okay. But we fill in blanks and stuff, and it just has to be presented in a certain way, like, and even anomalies the human mind will automatically overlook them in favor of a consistent kind of meta picture, you know?
Yeah.
So and that's well understood by people in theater and art and every other form of media, well understood for time immemorial, you know? It's like the poorest representation of a thing that beyond, like, just brutal abstraction, but, like, a poor representation of something is still, like, discernible if it has just even a few characteristics of the thing that it's meant to represent, you know? Like, you'll think, you know, it could look like a fucking rubbish kangaroo, but if you can see that it's got, like, a pocket on it, you know, and the big tail, you know, well, the dog looks a lot like a kangaroo, so.
Yeah.
But it's so easy that way, you know?
Yeah, you can see the trickery in play. You know, I sent you that Matt Damon video. Did you work out what I was going on about on it?
No, I didn't really. I watched the whole thing. Maybe twice I watched it because I kind of thought it was going to be something. I hoped it would be something obvious because I'm not very good at looking deeply into things. Like, I'm not good at seeing what someone wants me to see. I was hoping that it was brutally obvious so I wouldn't overlook it. But
no, I didn't. It comes into what they're trying to sell and what. And if you believe it's all the step point. If you believe in transgenderism, and if you believe that actually quite a lot of the time men play women and women play men, well, if you I was going to post something up on the forum about Minnie Driver. she's definitely got a male. What can I say? Whatever the Mini Driver is as a entity or as a person who plays her is male. So that begs the question: is the person who plays her is male, and then the and she was married to Matt Damon, then that itself goes into the question: is he female? So I was looking at that shot because I thought, well, that's where the difficulty lies. If that's truly the answer, that's then you've got the problem with men generally are bigger than women, and you've got to somehow get past that. And it was looking at that clip where they're getting really close, where they don't actually get in really close. It's all green screen. That's what the thing about that is. It's on the cut. You see it on the cut.
What is green? When you say green, you mean the background of it is it's both of those actors standing in front of a green screen, or it's one person in front of the green screen.
It's one person in front of it. I'm not 100% sure how they did it, but it's looking at, well, first of all, probably the people in the background that was filmed on a different day, and that was cut into it. So you've got them probably in a green screen studio, but each one of them do their own act by themselves. And the only way you can really spot it is on the cut where...
Oh, yeah, this is called... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
and you lost it really frame through it, but you can see the where the actor, where the director cuts it, and the angle where that fork doesn't exist in one frame. To, you know, the fork is, you can just tell by the fork, and it's all the point is to fool us into thinking those two people are close together.
Interacting on the screen, or interacting in some kind of environment where, you know, they're actually, to make it like a theater, a proper theater, instead of what you're saying it is, which is basically an amalgamation of computer images, individual computer images. Right. This is a known thing. It's called, I wish I could remember the name of it. I'm driving, so I can't look it up right now. This is part of this is how sophisticated software is and stuff. And that's why, you know, I've been reticent to talk about this stuff because I didn't want to, it can be pretty troubling, you know, to come across some of this stuff. But, yeah, they have, what's it called? Libraries full of these, of the renderings, of the captures and renderings of actors and actresses that they can then, from that, extrapolate models and move them around in any situation. No, this is a known. You could have had me up there as the lowest scale, Screen Actors Guild actor up there doing whatever, and then you put Matt Damon's face and body over mine, you know? I mean, they could have, or once, or whatever.
This is filmed in 2010, and it's the hereafter. I haven't actually seen the film. The hereafter, and it's the night school classes scene. This is for anybody on the recording who wants to look at this and wants to say, "Oh, I'm wrong. I'm not seeing it right." I'm not. It doesn't really particularly bother me. But the question is about the mask, and it is about if Matt Damon is really a woman, then they've got to get around that. And then when you look on the cut on this, and God, the way they interact, I mean, I think that's really him, but he's either interacting with somebody in a green screen mask that isn't showing up, or he's doing that on his own. And vice versa with the, or there's somebody further away.
It could be a stand-in or something. It could be, it could be any of them, right? It could be any of a number of things.
Yeah.
But what it is, or what it appears to be, is probably the one thing you can safely say that it is. Right?
Isn't
like,
it?
Yeah.
But that's the spooky thing about actors. If he's really acting on his own and doing that, and it looks like he's, that's just spooky, that is. And it's the same with it. If that's, maybe there is somebody there. You think, how can you do that? And then that becomes what they get awards for. I mean, if that's really what he's doing, is he's there acting to a ghost, to a shadow, to something that's not there. And yet you physically watching that, the way he gets up close to it, it feels like that they are in each other's space. It is freaky.
Yeah, you, is it the phenomena, or is it different than if it were a dinosaur? Instead of that scene, it's basically just take her out of the scene and put freaking a dinosaur in there.
Sure, yeah.
Would it be this, would you have the same?
Because they're getting, it's like, an, well, it's a kind of, I haven't actually watched this scene with the sound on, because I tend to not watch scenes with the sound on, because when you watch them with the sound, you get caught up on them. If you're just watching scenes, and you see really what's there, but it's just, the only more places you see it, really, and you think they're definitely not together. And there might be a hand, two of them, there might be a hand with her, and it's not Matt Damon's, because it's not clear if it's his or not, because it's off scene. But you can tell the way it cuts. That's the trick. As he's going in, it cuts to a different angle. And this is the thing, they've got any amount of money. You could just get two people, just do a straight. I know it's not the same, but you know what I mean? That's what you think. You know when they say, "Well, we've got no money to do anything," and you're thinking, how much time and effort to film a 3.5 minute clip? It's ridiculous. The fakery. It's ridiculous. I wonder if they got awards for it.
Well, you know, what are the awards for? But I mean, it's they're acting, I guess, right? I mean, what is acting? It's just all
it's make believe, it's fake, right?
It's like you're not a real actor. Well, what does that mean? You know, like it's basically anybody pretending. I mean, there are certain clinical terms.
Is anybody noticed that this about this clip? I mean, as I say, why did I look at this clip? I was just looking for a clip with Matt Damon and a woman to look at. If it's to do with sizes and you're making women small and men, you know, women who play men bigger and men who play women smaller, then that's what I'm looking for, is evidence of that in film clips where they are together.
Oh, now I'm in the live stream. Hello, everybody. I don't know how this works, but I'm now here. Rachel, original, is that okay?
Yeah, okay.
Cool.
So, we're just talking about a movie clip. it's just if you follow that, then that's what you're looking for in the if this is a true thing and that's what I'm looking for evidence of, and then you think, well, why did they go to all of the trouble of Green Street?
What if it actually isn't more trouble? What we're talking about, Faye, is the idea that, or it's not the idea, it's the reality that often movies or visual media like that have, instead of having like the actor, you know, instead of a straight camera filming two actors interacting on a physical background and that kind of stuff, that they're really able to, through software, just kind of manipulate the images of actors, of the person who is the actor who's, you know, in the movie, interacting with another person in the movie, wherein physically they don't really interact. If that makes sense. That's kind of weird.
I have to follow up what you were speaking about, because I just don't get it now. Do you mean the people that when two are talking in a scene?
Yeah, but really they're not in the scene. One person.
Yes, that's not difficult. That's a very standard technique for film editing. So, for example, you know, it would be now a long lesson in film theory and film analysis, but the basic is that it has to apply to some perception of normal human beings. So, for example, in the beginning, when they were showing people talking, They always showed both of them together in the scene, because otherwise the spectator could not follow who is talking to whom, you know. And then people got used to it. But for example, another good example, a very good example, is that in the beginning of film production, in the early, late 1800s and early 90s, there was always a space, because everything was also filmed in a studio, there were no outside shootings, and from left to right it was into the room, and from right to left it was out of the room. So you had some standards, you had to get used to it as a spectator, so that you can recognize these motions and transitions of the pictures as elements of the story. So he comes from the left, that means he comes from the garden maybe, or from outside. And then he vanishes into the right, he vanishes somewhere else. That is a evolution of the visual, in, let's say, language that we have. If you, for example, see those posters that they make for politicians prior to elections, they always look to the right and up. That is the future. They look outside of the frame, into the dark, into the deep future, let's say. So they are promising that they are bringing us the future. These are visual patterns that, of course, they are not really natural, because why is left outside and inside or whatever? We got used to them. It's somehow like a technical language that we have got used to. And concerning dialogues in film, there are also some very strong standards. For example, you have over the shoulder, is it called. You have two people in the scene. You always see one face to face and the other one over the shoulder. And when the one talks, you see this face, and then you see the other face. And it goes from the other side, of course. You have two cameras that are shooting the scene, at least two. I'm not sure, though, if you're talking about this kind of stuff.
Those were awesome things you brought up, but also about the over-the-shoulder, like, the person talking is, you know, you can assume that's the actor himself, but the person whose shoulder perspective you're seeing isn't necessarily the person, the actor that they're talking to.
You know, of course.
The standard.
Yeah, because, you know, for example, when they are shooting a movie, they do not shoot the movie from start to end. They shoot specific scenes that are coherent, where the guys and girls are wearing the same clothes, and maybe the same scene appears in the movie 20 minutes later, but they shoot them all together. Every scene is a whole set, let's say. So from there on, you can start, and you shoot one person as if it was a dialogue, and you take another person from 20 years earlier that you have shot, and you can combine them together in the editing. So you cannot see the difference, you know. It appears to you as if it is a simultaneous dialogue, but one is an actor and the other one is, let's say, a famous person from the past that you present as if it was a dialogue that happened in that moment. There are many techniques for this stuff. Yeah.
And it's all kind of, because the film itself is kind of like, it's obviously unnatural, right? Like, the whole voyeuristic kind of idea has, you know, you have to kind of entrain people to follow it, you know, and not just be, I don't know, naturally kind of put off by it, maybe. Like you're saying, when they come in the room, they go one way, they go out the other.
Yeah.
You know, you have to teach people what they're seeing before they just
see it. That's true. You get used to that language. But the interesting is why the question for me was very interesting concerning movie, because I was very interested in cinema and the movie techniques and such stuff, and I've studied a lot of this stuff without being a professional, you know, just out of my interest. And I always had the important question, why was it possible that this medium of moving images could become such a leading medium as soon as it evolved, actually? You know, in the mid-18th century, we had photography, and then it was just, let's say, the next second in time, it was already moving images. And it was so successful, and of course the controllers and producers of all this stuff, they recognized immediately that this is really a very important thing that happens. Huh? This technology is really very, very important, and you can do so much with it. But why was it? And there are many theories in film theory, but I personally believe more those who are saying that film is like dreaming. It resembles the art that humans do dream. And that is why it is able, this medium, to catch humans and to focus their attention for 2 hours, for example. People watch 180 minutes sometimes, some movie. It is incredible, because humans do not have such a long attention span. But if they go to the cinema, they sit down and they watch a movie, and they are really apathetic. They don't move. They hardly breathe. They are immobilized, and they are absolutely absorbed by the moving images and the sound. That's really incredible. That's something like a miracle, I think. Technological miracle. Yeah.
I don't know. Do you really? I mean, I know everybody says nobody has an attention span, but I don't know. Do you really think people don't have an attention span?
If I really don't think that, or what?
Do you really think people don't have an attention span?
No, I mean, in our time, it becomes less and less, because there is so much stress and so many things to do. Every child has to pay attention so many hours. There is no relax time, really. There is no muse, or how's the English word? You know, as it was prior, it was everything was slower 100 years ago. Now everything is fast and dense, and so I think this affects the attention span. But in movie, it is still happening. But maybe I didn't get your question.
I don't know. It's just one of those things that I hear from all different avenues where people say nobody has an attention span. It's like I just find it really difficult not to be absorbed in things. I mean, anything within work, within whatever. With whatever I do, I find it hard not to be absorbed in it.
I don't understand it truly. What is the opposite of attention in English?
Natural, normal existence.
No. The opposite is something like being distracted. Distraction, let's say. Yeah. Distraction is the opposite of attention. So, in a normal good life, you can pay attention to the things that are happening. But in a very, let's say, urban scene, I don't know, Manhattan, all this hectic and stress and driving around, everything is fast. You have to be very fast from one point to another. You have to work fast. You have to react fast. There is no attention. Everything is overdriven, and you are always distracted by more than one thing, let's say.
Russ, getting back to, you were going to say something about the way, come on, help me. You were going to say...
I don't know what you mean. Are you talking to original?
Yeah, original.
Ah, okay.
What were you saying about when we were getting into the mask aspect of the... That's, we sort of, like, drifted from that.
In the same vein that it serves a purpose, like, he was talking about the explosion of the cinema and stuff, that I think it has all this kind of dreamlike... It has this magical realism, dreamlike quality. It's a kind of a hypnotic, you know? And I don't think it's by accident, you know, that it has become so... popular that and that it has these trances almost that it, you know, because who can is it, do you think it's natural to watch something? Is it a good quality to pay attention to something for a few hours to some representative media? Is that a good thing, you know, to watch a movie and be absorbed in it for a few hours? I mean, I don't know, you know.
Is it different to books?
It's more passive, you know. So, I mean, they're different, of course, in that way. But I don't know, you know. I just the attention span thing was funny, or it was interesting to me on that idea, because it was and because it's you know, it entrains us of, like, again, like the kind of the measure and meter of time. You know, it gives us a perception of how things should look, how long things should last, you know, what should occur in a certain space of time that we kind of superimpose onto the world outside of the theater.
I mean, whatever job you're doing, I mean, even if you look at from the point of view of God, you get into, like, a rhythm and get absorbed in the activity, don't you?
I think working and stuff, like, if we're talking about a job, I think it's, and again, like, different, you know, it's just, a job isn't passive watch, you know, passive absorption of media, you know what I mean? Unless that's your job, I guess, but,
yeah.
But it's like you know, people, for better or worse, absorb aspects of their job into their identity.
On computer is, well, it's not passive, but it's, you know what I mean? A lot of people, if you code and stuff, or whatever, it's not passive.
Sure, but it's another form of, like, hypnotism, I think.
It's interesting. It's like, it's a type of meditation, isn't it? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think it is like teaching. It's teaching the person
know, like you're talking about frequencies and waves and stuff in the other chat, film is projected at a certain frequency or, you know, broadcast at it. And so it's television. I mean, there's a reason that only humans can watch television, you know. I mean, we have a dog that'll watch a little TV in there, but
it's interesting.
It's not by accident that only people can perceive, you know.
It must have to do something with dreaming, with this potency that humans have.
I think it has to do with programming the human mind, like exactly the same way as a computer programmed.
Yeah. No, maybe that direction, yeah.
The radio wave, which carries Wi-Fi, on a radio wave, FM radio is carried on a radio wave. Everything's carried on radio waves or on waves. What's in a wave is information, you know, and it's not always necessarily information that you perceptibly, you know, decode. Yeah. There's 99% of it is information that's subliminal, you know, or subliminal.
Yeah.
And that's doing something, you know, it's not, you know, not doing it. So, you know, different movies, I guess it's kind of like you attract a different, to be kind of materialistic about it, like you attract a different species of animal, you know, type of media, perhaps. But there's not just one movie for all people. There's all kinds of movies, you know.
Yes, that's true. But you know, the I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, go on, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, the medium is not what is in the pictures or in the images. So that's what McLuhan actually really recognized correctly. It is not about what does the medium say or show. It is how does it work? What is his type of technology? His type of technology is that it is able to imitate the modus of dreaming. It is an illusion. It is a manifest illusion outside of your body. That's why McLuhan, for example, always said that it is only comparable with LSD. If people would know how television works on their children, they would never allow it. It is like LSD, he says. It is an illusion which becomes manifest and which influences you, of course, but you don't have a it's difficult to become the master of it, let's say, as a consumer.
You're not, because you're a consumer. You're not part of it. You're not part of the process. There's a thing called the black box theory, or not theory, it's called the black box. Yes. It's like a representation. It's like, as long as there's the black box, whatever the input is, isn't that important to you. And whatever the output is what's important to you, in this case, say, television. But the inner workings of the black box, the mechanisms and stuff, those remain hidden in this, you know, mysterium. But if you crack open the box and really get into the nuts and bolts of it, all the mystery is gone and you're just left with kind of horror, you know? And it's kind of true for, I forgot who came up with it, but it's true for most things that are presented to us in that black box way, like the computer, like radio, like television. It is, and like McLuhan says, it is the media. Is the message, not the message. The medium doesn't carry the message. The medium is the message. You know?
It is that that means actually only that the medium that is the technology, the concept of technology of translation or whatever we call it. It's a system of translating. You translate celluloid material to visual impulses that look like moving people or moving cars or whatever. It's a translational system. It's like photography. You can represent on this medium visual signs that you actually can also receive through your organic abilities. It is similar to what you see, what you have on photography. That's why they speak about representation in that phase of this technology. And later it becomes virtual because they do not represent anything. They are just out of the blue made, let's say, these visual impulses. So the medium is the technology that is able to do this translation, and this transforms, of course, your organic, let's say, the network in your brain or the neurons, and because our brains, they are living till we die, they are changing all the time, they are not fixed as soon as we are, let's say, 20 years old. So it is a plasticity in both directions. The technology transforms humans, and humans are the ones who produce these technologies that transform themselves. I don't see there anything evil. I see only, for me, the question is who has the power to use this for specific aims? That the problem of power is always the problem, not the problem of technology.
Well, they tend to go hand in hand, though. Like, you know, abusive power, you know, through manipulating technology. And like, they tend to go, yeah, it's not that this thing is evil. There's, you know, this box or whatever isn't evil. Whoever's using it, whether it's people. I don't know necessarily if it is people, but whether it is or not, you know, that's the problem. But there's, it's like a chemical process, like in photography. The resolution of the image is like, well, it used to be like a chemical matter, right? In the dark room, chemicals. This is the same thing that the medium, the message can trigger kind of, what's the word, like its cues and affectations or whatever can trigger like, emotional kind of responses or whatever, but not physiological in the same way as the medium itself can trigger physiological.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
So what I was going to say is that, like, it's the effects of light and other waves at certain frequencies or in certain channels are known to have or trigger, you know, physiological effects in the body. Because it's just like ingredients in something, and the medium is the oven. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It can induce or trigger physiological responses. When they're talking about, you know, stimulating certain things, they're going to get a predictable result from it. If X, then Y, then Z. It's not a lot of change in it, I don't think.
It was just not a long time ago at the University of Lausanne. They were able to make people who have 100% paralysis, or what is the word in English? They are motion disabled, or how do you say? Because they have in their skeleton, they have had a very severe injury of the of this liquid that is inside the backbone, or what is it called? Yeah, something like that. Yeah, this, you know, what we have in our backs from the head to down, there are these round bones, and inside this tunnel there is a liquid. I don't know the names in English of these words.
Spinal fluid fact.
Yes, spinal fluid. Thank you.
Meningococcal fluid, is that what it is?
So they have, these people have had a severe injury, and the spinal fluid does not communicate with the brain anymore. It does not transfer the whatever signals to the brain, and they were able to make something like an interface, a real digital interface, a small computer chip, and these persons were able to move again. That is a very stronger picture of what you are saying. It is a matter of the effect of some signal, even if it maybe it's not light, but it is electrical, the signal.
the signal. It's, the point is, it's a signal. Yeah, that, you know, yes, the absorption of the signal right through a medium.
Exactly.
In that
yeah.
case, a chip. In other cases, waves. Waves
exactly. Yeah.
Penetrate yeah. the body. Yeah. No, it's the exact same thing. And these, instead of being able to stimulate your movement in your legs or something again, it's able yes. to stimulate, you know, the processes by which depression or anxiety or happiness or whatever are caused yeah. Or other processes as well, you know. There's a, it's a broad field, but there's like it seems to there's so much of the work that they do and the studies they do have to do with memory, you know, and how to like how to embed things in the memory.
Yes, there are also many movies that are dealing with that topic, starting with Blade Runner, which was one of the first very important movies about this topic of memory. I don't know if you know this movie, Blade Runner. It was 84, maybe,
yeah.
or something like that. Who was the guy who made it? I don't remember.
Is
it
Rutger Hauer made the movie.
No, Rutger Hauer was the
Not Rutger Hauer. What was his?
Harrison Ford was the playing the character of, let's say, hunter of Blade of replicants. It was in the future. It was playing in the future, and there were some kind of, let's say, robots, but they looked exactly like humans. They behaved like humans. They had emotions like humans. You could not differentiate them unless you knew how to differentiate them with some analysis or whatever. And they were living in another planet, on another planet, let's say. They were working there for humanity on this planet. They were actually like slaves. And they rebelled on that other planet and came down to, or back to Earth, to meet their creator and to ask him to let them live, because they had a very short life span given, maybe 20 years or 10 years, I don't know. And they wanted to live longer because they felt actually really alive and wanted to live. And there it was very characteristic how memory was the important part that was able to give these characters, the replicants, human, let's say, nature. They were given pictures from their past, where they are, let's say, with their parents and other siblings. But this was not real. This was only implemented in their consciousness, let's say, so that they do have a past which they can recognize as their own. Without that, you cannot have consciousness, I think, without this trichotomy of time, the past, the present, and the future.
There's it ties to the notion of identity, right? It's mostly mm-hmm. tied to that. And if you were to
continuity, maybe continuity more than identity. I'm not sure.
If you were to lose all your memories in this right instant, right now, and you know, would you be who you are? I mean, is it just the body that makes you know?
No. Let's take Alzheimer, for example. It's happening to old people that they have this illness. Alzheimer, you know it?
Right. I mean, it's functionally the same. But yeah, they've lost their memory.
They've lost their memory and their private history. They don't know who their children are. It must be very, very tragic to have that.
I wonder how much of that might be tied to beyond just poisoning from the environment, but like to media absorption also. But in Blade Runner, it's... The replicants don't know that they're not. They do know, right? But the one model doesn't know whether false or not.
Well, that's the topic that is actually the core of that movie, that the replicants start to realize the difference and still insisted. What was the name of this woman which Harrison Ford was falling in love with? Rachel. I think. Sorry, Rachel, it wasn't you. It was another Rachel. This beautiful woman in that movie. And she was also a replicant, but he did not recognize her as one. That was the end of the movie. He started to lose the let's say, the sense for this difference. And this goes in the direction that actually it is all only effects. So if you have the effects of a human, how can you tell the difference? It is all effects. Also the human being today, after all these technologies and this programming, what we are talking about, it is not the same as 500 years ago. So are we replicants? Are we computers? Are we, what are we?
I think some people are, in a lot of ways. I think some people have been completely, I don't know if it's really people, but it's completely taken over by the programming. The code, yes. The coding is a language, the computer works off coding. Coding is a language. Mm. People work off language, semantic systems, and it's really the same thing, you know. And some have been completely captivated by it, or enthralledom of it, maybe is the right word, to the point that everything else is gone.
I think certain ways of working, jobs, it does. Do you know that the way jobs are set up, a certain way?
You're breaking up. I think, is that my connection, or I think?
Oh, Rachel was breaking up. Now I cannot hear her anymore. Rachel, are you there?
Better. Yeah, I've got a problem of. Let me go out and come back in.
You should. You were breaking up too, Faye. Is that me or is that you?
I'm breaking up too. Uh-oh.
No. Am I all right now? Yeah. I don't know. There's something about if I stay on too long, my audio goes weird. Where was I? Where were we? Yeah, I don't know. There's something about where you're set up in offices particularly. I mean, you don't work in offices. But conditions, I don't know, it's conditioning. It's only with me now leaving an office or whatever. It's like breaking the pattern. Interesting. I can't really explain it.
Yeah, but I think I understand what you're saying. I'm now thinking, let's say, most of what we become after coming out of the womb is influence. Let's call it just influence, not programming, because programming is very intentional and sometimes it means also something negative. Let's call it just influence. So most of the things we become are influence, but not all. I'm absolutely sure of that. For me, for my part, it goes in the direction maybe of the religious element or something, or of something like existence per se, but it is not all influence. And even someone who is programmed through and through, and we could say, okay, that's really a boring person, huh? He's just speaking like, I don't know, it doesn't have self-reflection, or it doesn't have self-consciousness, this person. I don't know exactly what's the difference, but even this person could have some kind of experience in life. It changes everything. It's possible. Mm. And it's accidental also. It's not, how can I say it? You cannot do it on purpose, start thinking. It just happens some moment in time. We don't remember when we started thinking for ourselves. In the beginning of our lives, we do not think ourselves. We just repeat what we have listened to, what we are taught in school or whatever. And somehow we start also thinking, I don't know how to define the difference, but there is a difference, I think. Or not?
That is a massive difference. And it's just the level of sophistication of the technology and the ubiquity of it is the persistence of it is, you know, it trumps other kind of institutions because it's involved in every institution as well, you know, and it's, and this is just the idea of just basically media, I guess. And it deliberately programs code.
No, you are breaking up.
Mind that it can, you know, connect.
You've just gone on mute. I don't know if that's on.
He's really called Rachel, huh? I just put the link in the general unverified. Deckard was Harrison Ford in Blade Runner. I have to watch the movie again. It was really very inspiring for these thoughts. But Rachel, what do you think about memory and about all this?
I think what we are is, it's influenced by memory, but I still think if our memory was totally wiped out, we'd still be the same person. I mean, what we would make the same decisions. We wouldn't. The mold is already. Who we are is who we are. With or without the memories, the choices are. I don't think suddenly if I had lost all my memories, I'd suddenly make a whole different load of choices. I think, there's a certain personality side to it where, again, it's. Some of my choices, even though the information that I now know is different, I still have the same angst. It's just against different things. You know, that part of me, I don't think changes. Who I may be setting my daggers on, it might differ, but that part of me, I don't think it changes. I don't think it would change even if I lost all my memories.
Yeah. I'm now thinking, I think I understand what you mean, that there is somehow, I'm not sure if that's the right word, congruity? Is that an English word?
Yeah.
Congruity, that two things are somehow like the same, but they are congruent to each other. So somehow matter, or let's say the body, our bodily existence is congruent to the spiritual one. So if you would lose that spiritual, the memory, let's say, what we're talking about, you would still be congruent.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think I'd suddenly be a different... I don't think I'd suddenly have a different character. I think that, you know, I think that's as imprinted on me as my fingerprint. You know, the information might change, but the way I react to it would remain the same, because that's different. It's not memory related.
Yeah.
Okay. I think so. I mean, I can look back at memories from the earliest memories, and I can still feel I'm the same person. You know, what I mean? It's the same decision. It's the same. It's like left or right. It's all, you know, if I always choose right, even if I lost all my memories and I didn't know where I was, I'd still choose right, because that's, you know. I do think that's got nothing to do with memory. But we can be influenced, and we can be tricked, and we can think. And I think part of what the control system does is it tries to work out characters and then frame arguments. So if you always choose one way, they'll try and frame the argument to have that be your natural choice. You know, they'll frame it in arguments to get you to make a choice in the direction that they want. But if they frame the question in a different way, they'll get the opposite. I think that's part of the trick that's played on us through the control system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's even more difficult to, let's say, to grab or to grasp, yeah. But while you were talking, I was thinking of two examples. One is a little bit funny. I remember when I was young, having drunk more than being able to, digest. So you are still able, even in that physical condition, to find your way home, to find the keys, to open the door, to go take a douche, to go to bed. Even to cook something. So this is something like in that direction that you're talking about. And the other one is when you play a musical instrument. I don't really play one, but just a little bit guitar I was learning when I was young. And years later, even if you don't know that you still are able to play these accords, you just take the guitar and the hands remember. They remember without you knowing. So they go and play some song without you being conscious of that, you know. I mean, there is a bodily memory. Yeah. The hands have memory, it's and feet have time, memory.
If you think about, I remember I hadn't driven for I learned to drive like when I quite early, and then I hadn't driven for years because I didn't come for the car. You know, yeah. I probably learned at the right time. But you know, then you think I can't remember how to drive because you can't think how you can drive. Yeah. I don't know. I'm aware of how, and I was really panicking about not being able to drive because I couldn't remember how to drive. But then you just start driving.
Exactly. It's the body has the memory. Actually, the body has the real memory, maybe. Because the other memory we are talking about often is the narrative, let's say, memory, or the linear memory. We say, for example, in 1983, I went there with those, and we visited this museum, and then we saw that and that. That's somehow an artificial memory. We are creating it from the present, telling a story about the past. But the real memory is always fresh. It's always in actu, let's say. Oh, that's really interesting. Where is original? Is he back?
I don't know. He's still on mute, so it could be he's in a... Because he's driving, it might be the area.
Oh, okay.
He's not got a good signal. So hopefully he'll come back in when he's got a good signal.
Rachel, I became curious the other day. I was watching on BBC... Some ex-CIA specialist advisory, blah, 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 for special effects and disguise.
Yes, because I'm into the idea of disguises.
Yes, and you are so a specialist in that. And I was thinking of you. It was a woman character presenting all the story, very professionally made, everything, BBC, you know. But I was sure she's a man. And she's in disguise in that moment, you know. I don't know. Have you seen that movie? It's quite often viewed on YouTube.
No, I haven't.
No, you haven't. Okay. But it is really a whole branch of it's an industry.
It is a fascination. It is a fascination of mine.
Yeah.
Russ is back.
Hey, you guys hear me better now?
Cool, yeah.
Sorry. Getting my car.
You just arrived home?
No, I went somewhere else. Oh, my damn seatbelt light. I guess to go back to it, but it was like, without memories, the meanness of me doesn't change physiologically, I guess, or, I don't know, the word like, because just because I don't have my memories anymore doesn't mean, like, I'm some different being ontologically. But the memories are part of you physically, too, right? Like, it is still you. Your personality and stuff are so impacted by them. But you think that there'd still be, like, this imprint of all the experiences you'd had. You think maybe you still have the same personality that... I don't think you'd have any personality. I think you'd be like a tabula rasa, like.
I think if all your memories were wiped clear, we'd start it again. You'd make the same choices. You know, I think it's the nature of. I think your nature is your nature.
But we never. I mean, we never make the same choices because we're never presented with the exact same situations. You know.
Especially we might make exactly the same choices because if we didn't ask the memories to know that that was a bad choice, then we'd still have the same... What I'm saying is the thing that's in us, the thing that... If you're either somebody who's adventurous or somebody who's more careful, that's something that's in you rather than something that's memory-related. Your temperament's not... I don't think is memory-related. So... If you have your memories, then you can make different choices because you can think about what you did in the past and you think, well, I could do that or I could do that because I don't want to do that because I know what happens when I did that choice, so I'll do the other choice, you know. But if you didn't have the memories to say what you'd do, I still think you'd end up doing pretty much.
That's kind of like the theory of, like, or the idea of, like, choice and stuff. I don't necessarily believe that, like, the existential core of who a person is has anything to do with their choices, really, necessarily. Like, a sum total of all choices. I think it, I mean, how would you even perceive, how would you, your, the way you perceive things is based kind of on who you are too, of course. You know, you would, you wouldn't even be able to perceive things. You'd have no frame of reference for anything. You know, like you wouldn't even, I mean, how would you even know what a choice was? Like, you know, you'd, you'd kind of just be like a shade and shell or something. Like, how would you, you wouldn't know anything. But I guess the real thing is that, like, if it's okay, I think there's like a critical mass achieved here, because if it's okay for, like, memories to, if your memories aren't, it doesn't really matter if they're gone or not, whatever, you still get to be you, then that's kind of saying, you know, I don't, that's fine if you implant memories in me. It's also get to be me. Or if you extract the memories I have, because I'm still me, you know, you're taking.
You cannot extract memories. You don't believe that, really.
No, that's not what I mean. I mean, what I mean is, like, you can, well, you can get people to, well, this is a different subject, but no, you can, but you can mask them, you know? You could flood it with so much information that just like a search engine on the web, you know, you could just bury it so deep.
I don't believe that memories have the status of, let's say, they are not somehow like in the computer that they are saved somewhere and you can reach them. Memory for me is something that is always out of the present. It is always fresh. It's a new creation. It's a new combination of things that is very complex. If you, for example, try to reflect about a moment where you are going deep into your memories, you will see that it is always created differently than the prior time.
Right.
They are never the same. Only if you write them down, then you can read them and say, okay, this is my memory from that. But then it is dead. It's not real memory.
Right.
Memory is always alive. Memory is a part of living beings, I think.
Right. Well, exactly. But, I don't believe it exists in some glass case that can be accessed like some sorcerer's tower, you know, where
yes, that's
like,
what I mean also, yeah.
No, I mean that it's like the input or like the sense, the sensations and stimuli or whatever that can kind of lead down the pathway of certain memories, you know, coming up and stuff. That kind of stuff can become disjointed. No, but nothing is ever lost. I mean, it's all in the mind somewhere. It's not, you know, deleted. It doesn't go away. You know, it still exists in there somewhere. But I think that those the means by which the memory is accessed, not even deliberately, but unconsciously also, can be subverted.
Yes, of course.
And that's what I mean by, you know, I guess extracting memories is just make them.
Well, actually, it is the aim is to transform the natural ability to remember. That means to create in the present understanding, perception or whatever about the past, your past or whatever past. What technology does and the media and the controllers or producers or whatever is to try to configure these abilities according to the paradigm of digital technology. So that right. in the end you are able, or maybe perceptive better, to act and to react the same way that a digital technology device reacts. And that is less life and more technology. And that's why I don't like it.
I mean, that's what I think transhumanism ultimately really is.
Exactly, yeah.
It's not necessarily the cyborg chip, though that might be a part of it at some point. It's really the dependence on the, you know, the human for, the human's dependence on the machine for everything.
Yes, I agree with you, really.
They don't, and this is why I think that, like, I think it's all, like, based on modeling and simulation. I don't think that, they necessarily want you to think a certain, you know, to, like Rachel was talking about framing a few minutes ago. I don't think they can, you know, trick you or whatever into framing things differently so that you'll make this choice that they want. I think no matter what choice, I think what they've given you is only a certain amount of choices anyway, and they need some people in the model to be of this choice, you know, subgroup, and some to be of this choice subgroup, and some to be of that choice subgroup. It's not like that there's an antagonistic relationship. I don't think that they perceive it as. I think they perceive it as everything has value as far as data extraction, you know, and that being able to...
Good. I mean, I think about that and the framing. It's the... I look at it in terms of the Brexit debate and the framing of the arguments there and the way certain narratives were used and certain other things that, you know, that you might be aware of that weren't mentioned. So that's, you know, when I look at, without, you know, getting onto that topic, well, I could say, you can see the analyse happened. There was a push narrative and there was a particular good guys, bad guys thing to appeal to a certain section of the voting public to vote. Well, they're the bad guys, so we're not voting for them. That's what I'm saying. It's just the way I can see the way if they wanted to push certain things, and probably the same way as Donald Trump, if you look into that. I've not looked into him, but how he actually won. It's the narratives they use to push the people that particular way. So I'm not saying on everything.
I guess what I'm saying is I don't know that they view it as like tricking people. I think they just view it as programming people. If they view it as they just view it as training them, I think, maybe. Like, they don't view, like, tricking the... They don't think they're tricking the computer by inputting certain codes, you know? And I think they think that's the same kind of thing.
I would definitely say the narrative they used on it is a trick. It's just... Well, as I say, I can't say I know everything, but... It's somehow not... there's no... What do you call it? There's no... that was weird. There's no, like, sneakiness involved. Everything is bloody... There's a sneakiness involved.
Oh, sure. But it's like... It's also just kind of like... Like... To say that someone is tricked kind of implies that, like, they had some kind of choice in the matter or something.
Well, it's like a magician's trick where they push a card on you. They know the card that they're pushing on you, you know, so they can do the trick. So that's what I mean by trick. It's the card that they push on you.
But that's manipulative, Rachel, isn't it? Yeah, but that's actually the difference between what you are saying and what Original is saying, I think, is that you are leaning onto some ethical, let's say, thinking. A trick is maybe it's an ethical category. It's maybe not so good, or it's manipulative or whatever. And what Original is saying is it's a technique which is possible out of the technology that is. It is without having a relation to any kind of ethics. And that's now a discussion. I don't know if it's the one way or the other way.
That's kind of how I view it. It's kind of how I have to view it in order to understand what's happening with it. But I also, that's not to say that I don't think that it's completely malevolent, you know, and like totally immoral and, you know, I hate the idea. I think it's a terrible thing to do. But I just think that I'm just saying that I think that that's kind of the approach that's taken is not like, oh, really, we can trick these people. I don't think that people have any kind of choice in the first place. I don't think they were thinking about, you know, oh, well, they're playing on pre-existing identities that they've also given, you know, the
mm-hmm.
people's,
That's maybe the it's the idea that they try and convince us there is a choice. There is. Well, it's funny. It's Tina, isn't it? There is no alternative. I used to always, when the political thing, go bang on about Tina.
Right. That's right. Though there is no alternative. Like, it's not like, oh, they've got to trick us so we don't get all together and get this party that we want to be in, so we vote these shysters in. That's not even on the table, because that's not even going to happen. You know, they're just
the choice. Do you not think if you said either you can have the false narrative and that there's, you know, that there is a choice. If we can give you this, or we can say this is how it is. People go, well, we're sick of the lies. Surely they go, we're sick of the lies.
I don't think so. I don't think that's the case at all. I'd like to think it was, but I don't think it is. I don't know. Because if it were, then they could just see through it themselves, you know? And they might be programmed not to be able to, just like we're programmed in other ways ourselves.
Yeah, I didn't see, as I say, I suppose we all reach the stage of, but I didn't see this, up until 2 years ago. I didn't see what I see now. Not at all. None of it. And it never even contemplated to me. It's like, I can understand people who don't even see this at all, because it doesn't seem, why would you lie on such a scale? Why would everything that you do be not what is presented? I mean, that's at the end of the day what I end up looking at with the movie stuff, is because you've got a feeling, whatever they're showing you. Now, if they show you something that's what's his name? You've got somebody who's a 60s photo, that's apparently of something in the 60s. You're going, is that a 60s photo of you? Just got all of the people in and dressed them up younger and took the picture. I mean, it comes to the point of, it would be more fun for them, even if they had that photo, to actually get everybody in the old, with the bad haircuts or whatever, and do that. rather than actually pull up the 60s photo, they just reenact it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's the case, because why would you use some dumb 60s photo when you can convey the message you want through the technology you have? Soon enough, there'll be, history won't be like the history of visual media won't be, there'll be no black and white in it, It'll all be colorized. It'll all be, that kind of stuff just will be a thing of the past. It'll be forgotten about, like in the same way that people say, I've got to call, give me a minute, I'm going to call long distance on the phone. We don't do that anymore. That's just, that's a... that's a technological artifact,
Yes.
We don't go back and say, I've got to switch on the power grid, Everybody get ready to use your appliances. I'm going to go flip the grid on. Those things were reality for a while, and then now they're not.
Look, that's the end up now, is the switch the other way, because you know that whatever narrative they give you, you're looking for tells that the opposite might be the case. I mean, that's from that, as I say, the Matt Damon clip that I started with, I didn't expect to actually fall over what I fell over on that clip.
What was it? I have missed it.
that was before you came in.
Yeah.
I was talking about a clip. I've written the show notes. It's if you look at it, that they're acting to themselves, or maybe they're acting to somebody in a green screen. That's completely.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
So they're not. There is somebody there.
You were talking about Matt Damon, or did I miss the name?
Yeah,
Matt Damon.
Yeah, he just happened to be the actor in the scene that we're.
Yeah, so we were talking really about. The way the scene was constructed.
If I may ask, which scene was that? Maybe we know the scene, so I can understand what you're talking about.
It's Hereafter, and I've not seen the film. It's a bit where they're in a night school class, and he's feeding. I don't know who the woman. I don't know what her name is. I don't know, rice, I don't know what it is. He's cooked something and she's testing it, and she's saying what she thinks of it, I think. I've not listened to the sound even on it, so I can't actually tell you. But it's the point where you've got the idea that these two people are together in a particular close space, and you get mm-hmm. that feeling from the clip. They were filmed separately and put together. Mm-hmm. And the only way you can see that really is on the cut and the fork, and you have to kind of frame it, frame by frame, and then go, no, I don't believe that's what they did. Because they couldn't have done what they've done, but I'm convinced that is exactly what they've done, is the two people aren't in that clip together, and the background is quite obviously not the background that they're on.
Yes.
It's just, when you think...
That's so unusual. That happens so often in movies, actually. So, for example, when you have movies where they... let's say, talk to themselves, and they show the same person two times. It's the same trick. by the same technique.
Yeah, it's kind of spooky when you think that's what they're doing, is you think somebody, I mean, in your mind you think these two people learn the lines, and then they're interacting with one another.
Yeah.
Clearly. I mean, there might be somebody there, but there might not be. They might actually just be doing their part, as if they're talking to a ghost.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a bit creepy how that works.
It's completely creepy that the whole, you know, concept of moving images is working on humans so intensely, and it is the leading, it has become, since its invention, it has become the leading medium of education, control, propaganda, all the good and all the bad things. It's just the leading medium. That's really creepy, you know, and it's also fascinating, of course.
Yes, and yes.
Sometimes I just go to the with a tram from here to the railway station in the city, and next to me is some guy sitting and or some whatever and looking on his smartphone and watching some moving images on YouTube or wherever. It's impossible to not look. You cannot take your eyes from it. It is fascinating. It takes you. It sucks you in. Or what's the word? Yeah. So it is something that has to do with. I believe it has to do with human imagination, which is something very genuinely, or what's the word? Human. And also animals have also imagination. They dream also. We know that from dogs when they move in their dreams because they think they are hunting or running or whatever. But human imagination is so ununderstood and unexplored. And I think that this whole technology with moving images is also exploring the capacities of human imagination.
It's the it captures the imagination. You know, it's a phrase they use.
Yes, but also trying to find out how does it work? What can we do with that? You know, it's 150 years, not even.
The human is the only creature that can become fixated with its image in the mirror. You know.
That's actually disputed in the psychological theory. You know, that was one of these important psychoanalysts who said in the age of three, you have this mirror phase where you see your own image and then you start realizing your identity. But it is very strongly disputed because first of all, the mirror is a very What, pardon?
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the idea of like the recognition of self through the mirror or the understanding of the other through the mirror. I'm talking about the ability of the human to just be captivated by their own image in a mirror to the extent that they could just look at their own reflection and pick apart their own, you know, features for hours on end, you know. And other animals aren't interested in the mirror, necessarily. Like, they have a little bit of passing interest in it or whatever. But it's not something they're just fixated on. Whereas, like, the human image of self, our reflective self, is, you know, the mask or whatever is like, obsessional, pathological. You're not going to make a monkey neurotic based on its image, you know, in a mirror. You know, to the point where it's going to be driven to psychosis over it.
I actually don't have that fixation with my image. I hate mirrors. I don't have mirrors, only, you know, in the bathroom where it is belongs to the equipment automatically. So I don't know. I know the interest of women generally to create their looking perception. I mean, how they look for others. So this is a whole culture and history of techniques also. But it is not, I think, what you are saying. It is not a fascination about the own image. It is the fascination about presenting an image to others.
Yeah.
This what you're talking about is quite difficult to understand.
What it has, it just has to tie into the idea of image, you know, images, you know, yeah. Humans recognize images. Other,
yes.
And to the extent so much that it was perceived as a potential, you know, as a potential hazard, that in the Old Testament, you know, it's what, yes. The third commandment is to have no, it has to do with images and symbols, yes. You know, a prescription against it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, yeah, it's just...
There are cultures where images are forbidden as a religious artifact.
Yeah,
I think the whole Islamic world forbids the use of images for, let's say, for showing grace or whatever is the word to the gods.
Representational image.
Yes, representation of the god, like, is really forbidden. Right. Yeah, yeah. It is also, you know, historically, I think it is actually a strange thing that images became so strong in the Western culture. And the whole thing started in the late medieval and in early Renaissance, where the powerful people, which were the churches, these institutions, church, military, and the newcomers, the economical class in Florence and Venezia and wherever in, yes. Yeah, Venice, yeah. And they started having these artists, paying them, having them living in the big castles and paying their portraits. So from the historical view, it is also a strange thing. The prior use of images was for the dead. And it was in the Roman epoch. And in between there are no images.
Well, yeah, like cultic or votive images, like representation statues and stuff. But, like, did I cut out of here?
No, you're there. No, you.
It certainly wasn't on the scale of what it is now, you know. What do they call it? Icons? Iconography?
Yeah.
Yes, but iconography is very late. Huh?
Yeah, it is.
8th century... with the classical chronology, and the statues are not images, you know, they are 3D, so you have a bodily thing in the image. You have a surface, you have visual signs, and your perception is able to recognize in this visual signs an image of something, a representation of something. That's really magic, you know. There is no image on the surface. The image always is created in the perception. And there are some philosophers who was analyzing, Gilles Deleuze, a French guy, who was saying that the early iconography was actually has already implemented the concept of moving images, because when the very religious people went to church and were praying to these icons, to these representations of God or Mother of Jesus or what's it called, they were actually perceiving these images as moving.
Absolutely. You can see statues, you can see in some of the older churches that are still active, especially in like Latin American countries, you'll see the, mm-hmm. the statues of the saints and stuff behind mm-hmm. cages. Because these people thought that they were going to come out of them, you know, like come and get them.
Yeah.
You imagine this dark kind of, or dimly lit, but candle lit, you know, environment. You have the lycomancy or whatever of the shadows and the candles at play, the music and the chanting kind of, it's very enchanting. They do think they move, and maybe they do.
Well, the images themselves do not move. We know that from cinema, and they are just there. In the beginning, there were 24 frames, I don't know, per second, and later, now it is maybe 60 is the maximum, I think. I'm not sure. In the digital sphere. But they are not moving. Each of them is not moving. There is nothing. It's an illusion of movement. So it is like a dream.
If you look at the TV signal, the American signal was 29.7 frames at 60 megahertz, and the I suppose the whole of the European was 25 frames at 50 megahertz.
Are you talking about TV now, Rachel?
I'm just saying that the signal that TV
was
introduced. Do you think they were trying an experiment with having the two?
I don't know. I didn't know that there was a difference in the frequency. So in the States it was higher the frequency than in Europe.
I think it's 60.
Maybe it's.
I know it's 29.7 frames.
Okay, I didn't know that. I actually thought it was 24 in the early beginning.
It's 24 frames.
Yeah.
That's again different. So when you went to a cinema, that was the frame rate. But when the original TV broadcasting in standard definition, they're the two different frame rates, and it's just interesting to know.
Yeah.
I mean, they give you the idea that it's because. Oh, I don't know. Things going. No, I don't know. It's interesting if they were looking at.
I know what you mean now.
Maybe a control in a.
Well, I think please remind me. What is the limit for the perception of movement? I think it is about 22 frames per second, something, or 20. So if it is lower than this one, you do not perceive motion. If it is higher, yes, there is a limit. You cannot perceive motion if it is lower.
I know animation is 12. Yeah. You know, stop motion animation is 12 frames per... But you know, like... I can't think what's his name. You know, the plasticine models. That's if you're watching, like, Wallace and Gromit, that's 12 frames. So, does that look like it's real motion?
It doesn't do a...
I don't know what is this. Animals, right?
And I think it has to do with what's called, like, there's something called line rate, maybe is what it's called. Because it makes certain lines, and that the lines have to be... You know, we detect we deconstruct the image through the way the lines flicker.
You only see half the image at a time.
Something. So it's a series of like alternating lines and stuff. But regardless, I don't know why they'd have different hertz. Maybe it's environmental. Maybe it's
no. It must be technical. So maybe I think
because the electricity supplies that they have.
That's the one point. Maybe it has to do with the... Because I think in other regions they have 240 volt.
Yeah.
And in Europe they have 220, something like that. Maybe it has to do with this translation from the several devices with the outcome in the end of that. But it could also be an experiment because I believe everything that they do is experimental and they're trying to look for the results and to adapt them later. That's how it works. It could really be intentious. I don't know. But what was the scene you were talking about with the 12 frames per second?
Oh, no, that's like, stop animation.
Ah, stop motion. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Animation, that's...
That's filmed, but it is a special technique also.
It's not cartoon, it's plasticine model.
I
suppose it's disjointed, isn't it? It's not like people.
Yes, I've seen some of those stop motion.
Just to put it on the 24 frame, you just have two of the same thing on each frame. It's 2, 2, 2, 2.
Yeah.
That's why they do it. It's 12 frames.
Yeah, but somewhere is a limit. So if you have lower than, I don't know, 20, or I don't remember now, you have to look it up, then you do not perceive it as a normal, let's say,
motion.
If you remember, in the early cinema, they have so strange movements, Charlie Chaplin. It's like flickering, how you say it? because they do not have the right frame frequency. So later they corrected it to 26 and then to 30, and today it is about 60, I think. Or maybe the maximum is 60, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's double. It's basically the same thing, the way the double works, is it?
But you perceive it as very fast, and, yeah.
America, it's 60.
Yeah, but still, there is no real motion in there. Life is real motion, you know, you have your hand and you take your hand up or down, or you walk, or you move, and an animal moves. And leaves in the wind, they move from the wind. In moving images, there is no moving. There is no movement. So it's magic. It's really magic.
It's like the push for 4K and stuff like that, you know, you can see the reason why. It's not so much to... It's to film in 4K rather than to view in 4K. Because when you were using green screen masks and things like that, it's on or off, it's your black and white again. You don't have any shades of grey on that. So it's easier to spot it in older...
Can you spot it? I cannot spot it always.
In older stuff, it's easy to spot because you're looking at fringing. You can see fringing.
Yeah.
But with 4K, because they render it down, it smooths it out and it becomes impossible to see.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, that's the point. That's the reason for the push. There's so much resolution in film.
Yeah, that's really Oh, I cannot hear you anymore. Or are you talking?
No. I think Russ has stepped out.
Original, yes. He stepped out. Maybe he's going to come back. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Do you want to leave or are you staying?
No, we stay for a minute and then.
Ah, cool. Okay.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
We have still this fantastic clip from, what's his name? Velocet.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, oh no, it's really fascinating, moving images, and it's imitating life in the end, because life is movement. And moving images, they are imitating life. And maybe that's the fascinating point of it. I don't know.
I've just got to step out for a second. I'll be back.
Okay, cool.
Right, I'm back.
Hello. I was talking, but I forgot to unmute myself. I was talking about disguise, you know, and I was talking about Mission Impossible, where I was saying that actually they, in cinema, they always show to the public all the techniques that they use, but they do show them in a manner that you find it quite impossible that they use it really. But I think they use it really.
Yes, definitely. It is when you look at Mission, because I remember in the 70s looking at, and you go, you know, you just think it's fair enough as the plot storyline goes, but in reality. But well, you've seen the stuff I've posted up on the old forum. I've got like a new forum now.
Yes, I saw it, but I haven't joined yet. I have to join sometime.
Right, I'm going to transfer some of the stuff over from the old one into the new one. I started on the new one, but I think I'm the only one that is.
I was thinking, is it for you, since you are really diving deep into this topic, do you come to a point where you say, I am 100% sure that this person is just a complete artificial character, but it is a masked person, let's say, a disguised figure? No, okay.
Yeah, well, I think they use more than one. You know, the thing with masks is, because I've got things that I've posted up about robotics.
Yes.
Because I think one of the advantages that if you have, like, somebody who wears a mask, is then you can make a similar mask for something for an automaton. Now, I'm not saying that they actually use automatons like to give interviews or, you know, people might say that's a possibility. I don't think, well, the technology might be there, but, you know, for the amount of still pictures you see of people in the, you know, famous people in the news, then say you could, you don't have to pay them by the hour, you just pay them like a fee, create the mask, create the whatever, and then you can take any amount of pictures, still for, you know, for the still pictures on the web of something that looks like, and what's the easiest way to match, if you were going to do that, is you get the person who's playing it to wear a similar mask, because then you can have continuity. And I think it's part of where this comes from, or where this started, is continuity. Like, even if you think, oh, why would they use like a false beard? You know, if it's a false beard on somebody, then you're always going to get it correct. You could have like five false beards of different stages of growth, but if you're filming, you've got, you know that on that one you had number three. At such, so you can see that where it started was probably not in a bad way, you know, not like, but it's how it's been used in everyday political life.
Okay,
that's what.
So you mean in real contact with real human beings, where they have the sense of the presence of the other, not in the media. Okay, I have no experience of that, to be honest. Let's take, for example, this guy with the Tesla cars, etc. What's his name? I'm so bad with names. Elon Musk, you know, exactly. So, when I see his pictures, I always pay attention, because these images of him in the media are for me completely artificial. I am quite there, like hyper realistic artifacts. They look, you know, there is some artists, or many maybe, they were working with hyper realistic photography in the 80s and 90s. They look exactly like that, like they are constructed. Maybe there is a body inside, you know, a real person has to move, because they move on the, they go on the, on the podium to discuss with others, but the presence is completely artificial. It's like not, these people look otherwise in the real life. Yeah, but in political life,
if you look at that side of it, because they are a good example, you've got big CEOs of the, you know, Facebook, and as you say, you've got him. I think they're characters, they're not real people.
Yeah.
They're just characters. They're actors because the people actors play them, because then they sound like they're convincing.
Steve Jobs. I read your material about Steve Jobs and the techniques to make him look thinner with all this material and the shoes and etc. It was really fascinating, and I believe that it is somehow like that, but maybe. I was looking into Mark Zuckerberg for a while, out of curiosity again, because he looks this very artificial also, like Elon Musk. So there must be somebody who plays the parts, but maybe in all the sequences we see, it is with post-production, it is, let's say, adapted to this artificial personality. So there is a basis, I mean, they have now recognition software, okay? So they can use the features of, I don't know, 2 billion people or maybe more. They have the features, facial features of 2 billion people. So if you can, how many combinations can you do with these features? You can produce another 2 billion characters, so it's not really difficult, but it's spooky. It's very spooky.
I'm just going to pop out for a second, sorry.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No problem. Do you want us to to end? Oh, okay.
No, I just had to make that.
But you are following also the British or English or whatever political life, and what are you thinking about that?
Well, I'm not before I got into all of this, I was really quite into politics. It's how this relates to false narrative that we get in politics.
Yeah.
Really, I can't say I'm following politics now because it just insanely gets me mad. You see the lies. You think it's just. I find it very difficult to stay detached. I don't watch the telly at all. So when I do catch it, it's like it's jarring. I find it really, really. I find the audio of it jarring. It's funny because I've probably not watched the television.
Mm-hmm. What means jarring?
It's like it gives me a headache.
Ah, okay. You know, it's smashing.
It like bores into my mind, you know. Mm-hmm. I can't really explain it, but I find it very difficult to watch television now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe it's you know, you step away from it. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it.
I was never a television consumer because after I left my parents' home, I never had a television again in my life, and that's very, very long ago. So, since the internet, etc., I'm again watching moving images, news, etc., and it is really disturbing.
Yeah.
It is so artificial, everything. When they are talking there, it's not theater, it's, I don't know.
The news especially is very, it's, as Dave J would say, the tone of it is really destructive. It's got a really destructive tone.
Yeah.
And that's what I find really difficult to watch any of it. And when I'm looking at these clips, invariably, when I'm looking at film clips, I'll just turn the sound off, because I find that's the thing that actually bores into me more than the visual aspect of it. I guess because I come from a graphics background, it's always like...
Yes, I remember, yeah.
Actually, it's always interested me more, you know, but apps very audio, isn't it? Where I'm very visual, you know, so it's funny that, I think.
Yeah, I hope I understood what you were saying. I'm not sure if I get everything because I always miss the last some parts of your words I'm missing.
Sorry about that. I go to my settings and I invariably throw myself out the. I've got a new mic.
Pardon?
I broke my headset. So I've got a new headset. I don't think it's as good as new one. So I'm a bit trial and error. Trying to get the right tone. Is that better?
I'm understanding most of what you're saying, but sometimes I miss a word and then it's important because I have to understand everything so that we can talk. But to go back to this with the political sphere is completely detached to reality. That's for sure. But what I think, the last years maybe, I don't know, maybe the last 10 years or something, it has become so detached that it is like the whole consumers, not only those who believe media are lying or something, but everyone, they just consume it as part of their day-to-day structure without really, let's say, it's like... just spending time, you know, like you go to the dentist and then there is some Bravo or whatever, Cosmopolitan or some of his stuff, and you look into these pages, but you don't really read or remember anything. It doesn't matter. It's just passing time. So I believe that many people today, which are not really suspicious about media or something, they just watch it like that. They don't really... let it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't say it better. It's just like passing time, but maybe it's programming also. Maybe it's programming even better because they do not really consume it consciously.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know, you start seeing like little 30-second narrative sound bites dropped into like, you know, sports programs or, you know, like that's part of the what they're pushing. But, you know, things like, maybe they were always there, but you see them, I see them now. I think that's got nothing to do with sport. Why are they saying that? I don't know if they've just, it was always there, but you never saw, you know, I wasn't aware of it. Or they've just, I don't know, they're just pushing it too far,
It's really difficult because it's so complex, you know. I'm now thinking, while you were talking, I was reconstructing, let's say, a scene. I have now downloaded the app YouTube on my phone. So when I go to YouTube in my account, because I do not have this ad protection on the to now, maybe later I will be able to do it. But now I don't have this ad protection, the ad blocker. So on YouTube, when I'm watching something, I get interruptions and advertisements. And I realized I am just not paying attention when they come. I just black out half of my attention and wait and count to four so that the advertisement is finished and then continue with my lecture I'm listening or something. But what happens in these 4 seconds where I'm not paying attention consciously? I obviously still listen to it, you know. Uh-huh. And that's why it brought me to the idea, you know, that in the visual or better multimedia media, the programming is mostly over the acoustical level and not through the visual level. The acoustical level is what creates the emotions, distance, close, to feel close, to feel fear, to feel anger, to feel enthusiasm, especially the sports scene. When you say, it makes an interruption and then it goes, wow, you know, 3,000 people are around. That's enthusiasm, huh? It affects you. So the affectivity of the media is a combination of visual and acoustical thing. It's very important, the acoustical.
Yeah.
So what do you think about Elon Musk? What guy is that?
So, well, I definitely think he's a person in a mask.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of still pictures, as I say, it's pictures of an. I think, you know, they've got an automaton that they can pose.
Must not be an automaton. Why? Could be a real body for a real person.
It could be, but I'm just thinking from the point of view of paying people. They don't seem to like. They don't like. What's a way to keep control is to automate anything that they can possibly automate.
Yeah, it's easier.
These people are so rich.
Well, you don't have to kill them when they betray you afterwards.
if they were really so rich, why bother? You know, why? Yeah. Why have the hassle of having cameras and whatever? It's so. So that whole idea, I think, is a false narrative. That he's not a real person. You know, the shareholders who make it, but he's like the narrative. And as you say, if it's a person in a mask, well, first of all, if they step out of line, they can just be sacked and you could get somebody else to wear the mask.
Mm.
Or you know, you always want. This is the big thing with film, where if you followed any of the transgender.
I followed Unreal, actually. I still follow him, yeah.
If you follow some of the narrative, and I'm not saying that there's not an occultic part that could be part of it, or where it comes from, but if you look at it from a point of view of the media, if I have a face that is like the face of Chanel, and it's my face, then it's my property, isn't it? I don't think I could be sued. I think, you know, because it's my face, it's my property. But if I wear a mask, it's not my property.
Yes,
it's property. So that becomes the reason behind why they would want to produce something. So you don't, and if this comes into the transgenderism, if you get, like, say, a man to play a woman who's the face of Chanel, then the fact that nobody can tell
who's going to be sued. Nobody's going to be sued.
The fact that you can't tell it's even a man, they've got no way of saying, this is my image, you own such and such, because nobody even knows it's the gender of a person, it's the opposite gender. And when you look at it from that point of view, then you can see that more than anything might be the reason why men play women and women play men, because it's to keep the copyright, to keep the control, to keep the ownership.
Yes, that's one reason. I think there can be also more than one reason. You know, I was thinking that if you have an actor or an actress which is very good and very successful, how many movies can a successful actor play? You can make, I don't know, 3 movies per year or something, maybe less. And you do it with that role. But if you have for each actor, basic human being, several masks, as a successful actor, you can produce 12 movies per year with his same character, with his same human being. And I think that's also a technique. And but you brought me to an idea which I find interesting to discuss. You said prior that this story about transgenderism, of course there is also an occultic part, I agree with that, which is, in my understanding, the occult part is the conspiracy candy, so that it goes in the several, you know, states of the culture. It is alternative, it is mainstream, it is several things. It is for everybody is something in there. It's the occultic part. Then there is the real part, which is the profitable part, of course. Using automata instead of human beings to be able to control the whole narrative, etc. But there is also a part, maybe, especially in this period of time, I mean in the last maybe 20, 30 years, that you have mixed characters, as is, for example, Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, and more. I don't know the names, and I haven't studied this in depth or something, just thinking now loud, which are preparing the public perception for the 100% automata, which are no more recognizable or discernible from the others, you know?
Yeah.
Or to say it, I'm sorry, yeah, please, go.
Yeah, go, okay.
No, I was just saying, if you compare news, how are they called in English? The news presenters, the guys who are sitting in this on this table and say good evening. Now today happened this and this. Huh? The news presenters. If you compare the news presenters through the years in television, you will see that they go from natural human beings to complete artificial human beings. And in the last years, they go to even more confused genders, mixed genders, whatever. So they become even more artificial. And I think this is a preparation for maybe a state where it becomes not discernible, so that you don't even need some character who plays Elon Musk in publicity. You just have a CEO of the company. The shareholders never meet the owner of the company. And the company is under the control of one bigger entity, trust banks or whatever, the Federal Reserve, I don't know. So you can have,
It's like, again, looking at the political side of it.
Mm-hmm.
What you see in the movies, there's no difference to what you see in politics. I'm not going to say all of the people in politics are fake people in masks, because I don't know. I don't know that. But I know that there's certain people who their identity isn't what is presented. It's not what it is. And it comes down to accountability, because if you wear a mask and you are, say, starting the Iraq war, you're never going to be brought to justice because you don't exist. Mm. You can disappear like Hitler disappeared. That's part of the...
Maybe he never existed, you mean, like that.
You know,
like that's what I'm
saying is people can disappear and die because the character never existed. It's like Steve Jobs died. No, I don't think he did, because he wasn't a person. He was he was a character. And you can tell he's a character because for 10 years he wore the same trousers and the same turtleneck. That's brilliant. When you look at it from that point of view, that's his trait as a character. And you see it time and time again, and it gets worrying because you start looking at the past and you go, what's the two things that can pick things out about Churchill? What's the two things that you can pick you out about Hitler? What's the two things that can pick you out? And, you know, you go through real people, like Bertrand Russell. He's always got a pipe in it. He's never got it lit.
Think he existed, Bertrand Russell?
I don't know how he existed, but when you look...
He existed. He was teaching, he had students, he was public.
How he existed. The representation of what we've got as Bertrand Russell, when you look at it, it looks like a character.
It's comics,
I don't know how that all fits together. I mean, this is part of when I'm researching, I haven't got an answer to this, but you start... It's just when you see these notions of these people, that it's like shorthand to, it's the same shorthand. So, I know it's him because he's got a pipe. I know it's him because, and it might be that it's...
But it's training also, it's training for the public perception. Because if you see, for example, there are some examples on YouTube how you can dress and mask any woman to look like Sharon Stone or, I don't know, Angelina Jolie. So there are techniques. So because you recognize only the very obvious signs of a person, you don't really watch and pay attention to someone, otherwise you would recognize the person. But if you have only a picture, are you still there? Because now I left some signal of yours. Okay, if you are in a person in your real life, you can also be deceived and think, he now dressed like Maria or something, or she. It's also possible, but only for the first second. Afterwards you realize, it's not him or her. He moves not like that. The eyes are not the same. In an image, you have never the real effect of a human being. So you can be tricked 100%. Into believing that one person is another one. But I think, this, let's take, which one were you mentioning? The production of the public characters. If you remember Hitler, for example, he had a whole managerial group that were producing his acts that were not afterwards sent into the radio stations as his rhetoric and his photography presence in media. That was always artificial. That is always constructed because it has aims. It has to impact.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean. Actually, yeah, please.
Actually, look at the amount of media.
Yeah.
That is available. You know, that you can actually pull off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, video and stills of Hitler. It's kind of, it's like, when did he have time to fight the war?
Obviously, he didn't fight anything himself. There were others.
It becomes that we don't really understand, or we don't really know what the true...
We know a little bit. We know a little bit, but we know it, you know, from another side. Let's go back to Elon Musk.
Yeah, Elon Musk.
Allegedly, he is the owner of an entity that is producing or trying to produce effective cars that work without fossil fuels. Is that right?
Yeah.
And he has many actionaires, or what is it called, and he's in the markets, in the DAX and whatever they are called. Uh-huh. And it is an entity that has a very strong future perspective, because electrical cars are going to come, and fossil cars maybe are not allowed. In China, they have already forbidden fossil cars by 2030. You cannot drive in China with a fossil car. So it is an entity that is very strongly promoted for the next years, and it is going to gain much profit.
Mm-hmm.
What we do not know is who is really owning this entity.
Mm-hmm.
So we know already something. We know that he is only a representation in the public sphere for the owners, and we can maybe hypothesize who the owners are. If we, for example, if we would analyze the market data of this entity and the shareholders and what's this stuff called, we would find out, maybe. I cannot do this research because I don't understand anything of markets and all this stuff, but I'm sure that other people are going to research it and then we will know. So for me, for example, although the fascination of how does it work in the media with this character, that's very fascinating, of course, but I am more interested in what is the entity doing, how do they corrupt the markets, why do they fight wars with through the this system with the capital markets, etc. How do they control the energy supply? That's something that interests me more, you know, to find out how to understand and how to influence with knowledge and with digesting facts, how to produce knowledge about this kind of stuff also. Yeah.
Mm. It's interesting, Elon Musk, because he's now like the forefront of space, isn't he? His company. I mean, that's what they kind of do, is they bring back characters. They create a character and then they bring them back.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're imagining them in a different setting. Because he started off, I mean, maybe it was always going to be... I don't know how that works, but...
What do you mean here always is going to be?
I don't know, it's like Richard Dawkins started off his life on as somebody presenting lectures to children. In the read lectures back in the 80s for the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
And then quite obviously he is what he is now. But you can see the same thing as Brian Cox started off. Well, he started off as a pop star, and then he produced a BBC television programme about space. And he's supposed to be like, and now he's one of the forefront professors of space. And you can see, it's, they build a character. It's, and it, Elon Musk again, they build the character somewhere and then they move them up and put them in to something that wouldn't. I mean, if you were into cars, why would you then suddenly become into space? What's the connection?
And why would you start smoking joints in public? With his, he was on some show, I think. They were all around these pictures with him smoking a joint. So I think that is a, really, it is, but from some point of view, it is so much comic, not comical funny, but comical as comics. It's black and white. It is so characteristic or how so strongly designed to become obvious that he is a character. That is the point with him that makes it interesting. So that's why I'm saying he is a preparation, or he is educating us to perceive public personas which are artificial as if they were normal. So maybe later, you know, they have some... how are these horses called with the thing on the nose? Unicorns, you know, exactly. So you have a unicorn telling you the news and you believe it's real. So you have really already a unicorn telling you the news. But you don't recognize it. You understand what I mean? It is splitting you. Yes.
Because one of the things that I started looking at was old election broadcasts. Like there's like general elections in the UK, they have like a program that will run for 6 hours, you know, from the close of the poll onwards. And
they are discussing the results, etc.
So I've got a couple from the 80s, I've got the 97 one, the 92 one. And you start looking through them and you go, actually, I don't know if any of the people on now are that much more comical. You know, like false as some of the people that appeared on them. So while you and me can see, I don't know how far it's shifting to, you know, like a big reveal. It's just, I don't know, maybe it's
a big reveal? What kind of reveal?
No, I don't, you know, when people think it's getting, there's definitely, it's heading to a point, I don't know if it is, I mean, I don't know if it's not, but I don't know if it is, because some of the, it's just, it's you know, looking from the perspective that I've got now, looking at, like, say, the 97 general election, and I watched it, and it's like, I'm almost laughing my face off at how unreal it is. I'm thinking, it must have been filmed in advance. I'm pretty sure. It wasn't run live. It's all pre-recorded. And I don't know, you get caught up on who's going to win. When it's happening in real time, quite obviously, you've got the excitement of who's going to win the general election. Now, I don't know if it was, but thinking about the ability to create graphics that they did in 97 and the graphics that they had, I've got a fancy that some of those graphics were created beforehand and just put it to the run as slick as whatever it is. I think quite a lot of that election was pre-recorded. And then what does that say?
That's really insane if that happens.
Well, how insane is it? I mean, I was
very insane. It's not impossible, though. I only say it's insane. It's not impossible.
It's not. Well, there's the sound bites of people that you could throw in anyway. And I don't know about sin. It does beg the question. It's just looking at it from the point of view.
To be honest, I think that If it is necessary, I am sure that it is possible to be produced like that. I haven't seen those elections that you say now from England. I think it's really possible, and it's also possible that they, quote-unquote, do it if it's necessary. It's just a matter of how much under control, under military control, is one country. And England is, of course, one of the countries that is completely. I don't believe, for example, that in Switzerland they would do it, because they must have live reports from the parliament at the same moment when people are really there and also reproducing material. So it's a small country, it's completely under control, but not of that kind. So here the control functions are, it's another type of control. They, for example, would never have somebody saying something that is not allowed in these reports. But the life is life. It's not pre-recorded. I believe in other countries it's possible, of course.
Yeah, as I say, I can't judge rent from any. It's just, you know, I mean, just, it's looking at it from a production point of view, and how you get something to look that slick. And I would think anything that they could do, and right, you might say, well, it's not the results. I don't know, it depends how far you want to go with the narrative. You could say, well, they do so much pre-recorded and then throw it in, because they really aren't talking about anything. Although it feels current, they're not actually talking about something, you know what I mean? They can talk about something without actually, you know, it could be like within the time of not knowing, or a week before not knowing, you know. You know what I mean? So I don't want to peg my thinking up to the mask that it's all totally fake. But there's aspects of when you look at some of the elections, you think there's trickery going on there, you know. And it's easier to spot now, knowing the technologies that we're aware of. Looking back in the past, it's easier.
Well, look, yes, of course. It's easier to spot in the past. That's true, because the technologies become more understandable every day, so going back you can reflect better about it. But, you know, for example, about live transmissions during elections or something, they have always all the possibilities prepared for this, for that outcome. They have all the texts, all the reports. Of course they are prepared, and they just choose out of the results. And if they make then a live interview, the interview is really live, you know, that they can implement it in a prepared report that they do.
Pre-recorded. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, but for example, elections to be completely pre-recorded and just transmitted, as for example 9/11 was, that would mean that it is dictatorship 100%. They control everything. There were no elections. It was just, well, they just threw it away.
I'm kind of erring on the side of that, the country I live in.
Really? Okay. For England or for every country?
No, for the country I live in. Okay. I can't make any judgments on any other country. I just know that.
Rachel, apropos England, is there going to be now a second referendum?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not following it.
Okay.
I wouldn't think they'd want to go there, but I don't know. I don't know. as I say, I've stopped. It just gets me angry because it's the fake narrative, and as I say, for me, it fell apart on when they pulled the Joe Cox stunt. That's when, really, for me,
that's when you started,
That's where the you know, and that was, you know, that was like their biggest show.
Yeah.
The biggest show of their hand was that event.
But it was important, you know, for them, because they have to save the pound when the euro crashes. That's not very long. I mean, we don't have to wait for long now to see that it was about the currencies. You know, it was the currency war.
I don't think the Joe Cox had the narrative that was with that was a weird one. I don't really want to go into the ins and outs of that, but it's just for them to play that card.
Yeah.
You have to trace how they were able to do it, and then that pretty much tells you that elections are fixed, because she gained her seat in 2015 at the same point that we weren't going to have.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't want to go into that in this because it's too late for me to.
Okay. Yeah. We can continue another time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
On that particular issue, for me, because I knew straight away that was fake because of when her birthday was. And then you've got to say, how did they manage to have the date of the referendum as the 23rd of June and their birthday to be the 22nd of June? How did they manage to fix those two events together? And then it's finding out or sorting out that puzzle that breaks that open. And then you
think. But you think that is difficult? I don't think it's difficult to fix the two dates.
No.
I think it is both correct, you know. I think that the elections, I mean the referendum, or how is it called? The votation? Public votation? Or how is it called?
No, and they get the 22nd in there. They love the 22nd. It's just, and they get the fact she was killed on the 16th of the 6th, 16, that encodes 666 and 767.
Yes, but you know, it makes it easier to understand if you know that the election, the voting was fixed. And this event was only the alibi to present the result of the election as understandable, because most people would have not understood.
No, because that was the opposite to what the result that they got is opposite to that event. It didn't deal with that event. It was the opposite.
No.
Yeah, it was.
It was the exact correct. Look,
she was a Remain supporter.
Yes, she's a Remain supporter, and she was killed by someone who was a nationalist.
Yes,
and the people allegedly voted for the Brexit.
Why she got killed was for the 22nd, because on the 22nd, on the last day of campaigning, it all went to Remain. That was the only reason why she died. That was to give the last day of campaigning to Remain, because there was no, because it was all about her birthday celebrations, and that's the last legal day of campaigning was her birthday, and that's the whole point of her being killed was for that day.
First of all, she wasn't killed. We know that.
Yeah, we know she wasn't killed. Yeah,
it's just the event, you mean. So you are asking what is the meaning of this event? Why was it necessary or what? I don't understand.
I'm not asking. I'm telling you that's the reason for it. Because that's why her birthday was on the 22nd of June. Was because all across Europe, there were birthday celebrations for Joe. On the 22nd, the last day of legal campaigning, that was... The Remain vote got an extra day of campaigning that the Leave vote didn't. They didn't have a look in on that last day of campaigning, and that was the whole point of that exercise.
I don't get it, sorry. I don't understand. I don't understand, you know, what does it mean? I mean, the result was Brexit. The result was Brexit, and it was fixed.
That's not the result that they wanted.
No, that was the result that they wanted.
It actually wasn't the result that they wanted.
Yes, that's now the interpretation that we are going to do if we take the time. But you know,
I can tell you categorically from researching the 5 years before running up to that, that wasn't the result that they wanted.
Okay, so, because, you know, that's very important. If you're saying, let's take the hypothesis, it wasn't the result that they're talking, so the action, the staging of this event was from those forces that wanted, that actually wanted to hinder the result, and they're able to do it. Is that what you're saying?
You know,
so you have to you have to see.
After it was announced that, straight within minutes of David Cameron announcing that Brexit had won, the whole of the political establishment fell apart. And it was literally to create a news bomb so they didn't have to do anything. And as I say, because I'm in here from the inside of it, it just seemed absolutely insane. But as soon as you pick apart when you pick apart that, I don't know where they're going with this, and I don't really care now from the point of view, but they showed the hand on that one thing, they showed the hand, but I don't really want to go into it on this.
Yeah, I think it is a very important topic, because it has to do, you know, with who really controls at the moment the policy. What's the level in England, you know? Who controls the English banks? Because we always talk about those who are really able to manipulate the political sphere and the public sphere. And we are speaking about Anglo-American Empire or the London City of London, etc. But if you were right, I'm not sure that you are right, if you were right with your analysis of that event, this would mean that it was a putsch, it was a coup to influence the outcome against the local elite, against the local policymakers. So it would be from outside, and it would be from the American, of course, policymakers.
I don't get the feeling that there's two sets of elite. There's one set of elite and an agenda.
That's not sure, you know. We don't know exactly. We know that the Federal Reserve is one part of those, the London City is one part, and there are also other parts, smaller or concurring or opposing each other. But the event of the Brian Cox staged killing, would help us maybe, if we understand it, would help us to get more information about control centers.
The whole point of the whole point of the Brexit referendum and the way it was sold to the British public was, even in the words "leave" or "remain," "stay constant," "stay no different," "it won't be any different," "it's, you know, you're comfortable in this," "remain." It's in the word and that they chose.
Yeah. But let me ask you something, if I may. Do you think that would be, you know, it would help understanding? Do you think that the staged event, Brian Cox, supported, in the end effect, did it support the outcome of Brexit, or did it not support the outcome of Brexit?
No, it didn't support the outcome of Brexit. It was the opposite. It was to kill the Brexit vote.
It was to kill the Brexit vote. So the Brexit vote was the genuine vote of the English population.
I think, I do think that. In fact,
because I do not think that. I think that's my hypothesis of the whole thing.
I'm in this country.
Yes. I do not, you know, I do not oppose you. I just say, from my understanding,
in this country, from the people I sense. Yes, I think that Brexit was the true. There's enough people. What they tried to do is they tried to go with Sweet Talk and the Labour vote. Yeah. And I went to Labour because I was political and I was a member of the Labour Party, and I met enough people in the Labour Party that said there's no way. Yeah. And it's not like they hate, but it's not. It's got nothing to do with hate in Europe. It's about it's something else. It's not about that. And that's the task to the Labour vote is supposed to be the pro-Remain vote. But if you look back in history, it never was. It's because if you want to protect, it's smaller. It's not bigger. It's about it's alien. It's actually the Remain is actually an alien concept to people who are left-wing. It's just an alien concept. Yeah. But that's what they went with, is to push the... And there's hardcore left people that just wouldn't entertain it because they want to nationalise the trains. They want to make things better. They don't want to be tied down by European rules, not because of any particular hate of Europe. They want to set things up in a way that is for the people in the country that they can control and have national industries. And it's a real thing, and you can't do that under rules set up somewhere else. And the thing is it's never discussed. It's always based on, oh, you're just a bunch of racists. No, it's the political meme of what you want to do. And that's why you've got the right-wing people who want to keep nationality because they believe in the empire or whatever. They want to have that Britishness. You've got the left people who want to keep common law, keep that, because they want to nationalise industries, nationalise electricity, make a good, you know, so you've got the left and the right, for whole different reasons, want to keep Britain as Britain, and it's only the people in the middle, the third way, as Tony Blair would say, that want to stay in Europe.
You know, it's really difficult because my infos about England and the Brexit vote were only through the media, and I don't really have another impression. But I know some things about the whole story, you know, what is really some facts, I mean, you know. For example, England was part of the European Union, but it was not part of the Eurozone. So it had very special conditions, and actually England was profiting from the Eurozone without being part of the danger of the Euro collapse, which is pending since 10 years.
The thing about framing it is as in Remain, because it's saying there's no difference, there's no change, there's no whatever. That's why they framed it like that, but it wouldn't have been like that at all.
The framing was... Yeah, the framing, I think, was more the love. Yeah.
It wouldn't have been like that at all, because if you look at the treaty...
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support. In my dream, I have a
plan. If I got... Okay, move Cindy.
I've lost my train of thought.
Okay, we will come back. But okay, so you say they tried with the Brian Cox event to push Remain. To push Remain, and they were not successful.
That's the whole point of that, is to push Remain.
The
thing is, the idea that Britain is anyway not already a major player in the EU is I just think is totally a balmy concept. It just is. They just... I mean, part of the reason why it irritated me is because they always use the EU, you know, before the Brexit. They always used the EU as the human shield for whatever government was in. They said, oh, it's not us, it's the EU. It's not us, it's the... You know, they just love it because they sidestep responsibility. But thing is the people who, it's not a different set of people. It's like the bad cop. Britain was the bad cop, and then you've got Europe's the good cop. But if you look at the actual treaties that have been signed, basically, the Parliament will go, what, European law and British law are incompatible with each other, because European law uses the concept of civil law, and civil law, it's all responsibilities and codes and whatever, and you give them permission to do things. Common law, it's you're told a set of laws that are against the law, and then everything else is lawful. So they're incompatible with each other. So you can't have a country that exists with both laws running side by side.
I understand.
So we would have stayed in Europe, and we will, probably. The replacement of common law by Roman civil law. That is the point of it. That's the point of it, to replace.
I'm not sure if that's the main point, you know, because I don't believe actually that law is the basic element of interest of the elites. I believe the basic interest is, it is this whole story with the euro and the eurozone and the special conditions for England were part of the war against the euro, you know.
Have stayed in Europe?
Pardon?
If we would have voted Remain, we would have taken on the euro. Without a doubt, we would have taken on the euro.
No, I don't believe that. I don't believe that, because the euro is, since 2007, the euro is dead. You know, if you know that. The euro is empty. The banks are empty. They have always, they have every day that is passing, the euro is, it's just a matter of time, you know. So they saved the banks in 2007. They saved the banks, but they saved them only because they made the same system that the dollar was making 100 years now, with inflation, with putting out more money and zero interest, so that they could fill the 10%, which is obligatory for banks to have, in order to give out credits. But when time passes, the earnings of banks become less and less, and then the ability to give out new credits are losing also. So the euro is dead. And I personally have the hypothesis that Britain or England was not part of the eurozone exactly because the whole plan was the fight between the dollar and the ruble and the yuan, and Europe is in the middle, and the euro has to be destroyed in order to win in the economical fight. You know, it's about work, it's about wealth, it's not about ideology. That's only grass for the salad ideology. The memes are only for propaganda.
Money is nothing without property. It's about property.
Of course, it's also about property, but property in Europe is going to be lost in the next 2 years when the euro crashes. The whole eurozone will have 30% inflation per month. That is the prognosis of the specialists. And in Britain, you are not going to have it.
The crashes is part of the way they steal property, isn't it? That's because money has no intrinsic value. It's not based on anything other than promissory notes.
It's true. Money, in the end, if you have to take an asset in order to refill the reserves of the banks, the system of the banks, which is empty, the state as the only possibility, either to put out more fiat money in order to make an inflation and to lower the life standard, or the state is the only one who is possible, who is able to do that. It has the possibility to put on every property in the country hypotheques, or how are they called in English. So they can say, obligatory for every person, let's say in Germany, they are going to get a hypotheque on their property, and their property will belong, let's say, for 50% to 50%, it is going to belong to the banks. So the banks are going to regain worth, and that's the system. That's how it works.
I don't.
And England was not in the euro.
But I don't see it in the same way as you see it. But the end result, I agree with you, is exactly the same end. The thing is money is, and that is a concept, isn't it?
Yes, it is a concept. It is a technology, actually. And it is a technology which only some guys are capable of, and most of us are not capable of. You know, it's not taught in schools how to work with this technology, as if it were the computers, for example. You have to learn sometime, but never you were taught how to live with this technology. It is a technology for the production or creation and a distribution of wealth, and the system works, and always less people get more parts of this wealth that is created by most of us. That's the system.
After the crash.
No,
the rich. Because the point of the crash is it's to transfer the wealth to the rich.
Yes, it's in the crash. It is just a very, let's say. It's a quote-unquote revolutionary distribution to the elite, but actually the distribution happens every day. For example, the devaluation of the dollar the last 100 years is also a stealing, or how is it called, from the productive people that are working. Because the dollar has less and less worth, so you can buy or have less access to the wealth with the same work that you are doing. So that's one method how to devaluate worth and distribute it to the elite. They are doing it all the time. But now they have big problems because of Asia and Iran and Russia. Not now, they have these problems since the 70s.
I don't think Russia is a problem.
You don't think Russia is a problem for the dollar?
No, I don't think Russia is a problem. Russia is exactly what they need Russia to be, whenever they need it to be. But I don't really want to go on this subject because it's not fakeology, and I'm sick of politics because there's nothing that I can say or do. So it's a subject I always end up one way or another finding myself on, but my annoyance and tedium of it is because it's all a con. It's all a con. It doesn't matter at the end of the day how when I made my vote for Brexit, because I had the idea of, I want to see a nationalised train service that isn't the most expensive in Europe, that is actually the cheapest in Europe. I want to see education that isn't the most expensive in Europe. It's actually free. Because these are all things, you know, I want to see electricity that isn't the most expensive. Well, I don't know if that is the most expensive in Europe, but I know we've got very expensive electricity and gas. I want to see them all being nationalised. And that was...
How are you going to nationalise electricity in England?
That was my my little thingy bob dream. About,
yes, okay.
And what I'm saying is left wing people. When left wing people, socialists, they want to, you know, they have. It's not national. It's not.
Yeah, it's fake. Really. Now we are on psychology again.
It's about controlling things and distributing things so everybody gets a piece of the pie. But when you feel that, and as I say, the Joe Cox thing that made me realise, I don't live in a democracy. It doesn't matter what I think at the end of the day, because whatever the even if they can't salami slice it one way today, they'll do it next year, they'll do it in 5 years, they'll do it in 10 years, they'll do it until they get it passed. They'll push it and push it and push it until they get it passed. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what.
But
why.
You know, understanding the methods with which they work and with which they manipulate and deceive the public opinion and the hiding of the knowledge of the real circumstances, etc. That is something we can do, and I think that is actually psychology. We analyze things that are presented to us as one way, but actually they are the other way, and or a third way, or whatever. So I think it is not black and white. I think it is important to see the context of the psyops. I think that is something I missed in my previous phase being here. That I went into how do they work, how do they do it, and I didn't find it out. Of course, it takes very long time to understand it really. But I think through the connecting of the interpretations and the narratives, we can also find out some things.
Yeah. You
know, so the Joe Cox, for example, as you say, it was staged or faked better. It was instinated, or how is it called, in order to push actually the Remain and not the Brexit, but it was unsuccessful.
Yeah, well, you know, when you think about, I've mentioned this about elections before, the thing with normal elections is usually you have at least four parties taking part, and, you know, I think bigger elections, you might have more people taking part. You know, like somebody like, I noticed that David Cameron, who was the Prime Minister, when he was his 2015 election, I think on the podium with him was like about eight people. So you usually have at least four. So therefore, to win or to win or influence the election, it's easier. Whereas on the Brexit, it was a straight two-way choice. So, if 50% of the people who are eligible to vote voted Leave, Remain win. So, when you look at it from that point of view, part of that last Joe Cox thing and the last day of campaigning being totally for the Remain, and this is the whole of Europe were already with their little birthday parties for it. And even, I think, Australia there was one. I was looking on the news. It was to depress the Leave voter going out and voting. That was the whole purpose of that. So people went, oh, somebody died and she was a Remainer and everybody's having a birthday party and we'll all stay home. But
the nationalists are the bad guys, of course, as always.
Yeah, as always. But as I say, they push that narrative, but if you are a socialist, it is your natural inclination to want to say, leave. And in fact, I think that's part of the reason why Jeremy Corbyn, if you know him, why?
Yes, I know him.
When he won the candidate.
Is he genuine, you think?
Jeremy Corbyn, because his argument was.
Yeah.
To the referendum, because apparently he'd campaigned all his life to leave and to renationalise things, that Europe was bad because you should renationalise, we can't renationalise things because we don't have control of certain things. So that was his argument all the way through, and then he became the spokesperson, the head of the shadow leader. And he said in the end, he said, it's a hard decision, but we should really stay. And I think it's part of the thing that all through his life, he said, we should leave. But he goes, it's a hard decision because we should leave, but we should really stay. And you can see that
it's hypocritical, And also, I think...
The point is the Dutch. Because if you went, oh, well, he's been so leaved, but he reckons that, you know, if you don't know. Whereas I look at it from the point of view, of nationalising industry, and also from the point of common law, and that I don't want to live on.
This is a myth, Rachel. That's not possible, you know. You do not have any nations anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, the whole thing...
You can tell me that now, and I know there's no nations now, but at the point of time when that vote came along, that's why I voted.
Yes, I understand. And, you know, it is not, you know, it's normal that we do not have the overview over all these connections, etc. We're just trying to understand them. But I personally believe, for example, that the left... in the last 30 years is the most hypocritical part of the political theater, because they are, just as an example, I cannot know about England so much, but I know a little bit more about Switzerland and Germany. They are, for example, exactly to the same percentage, are they part of the economical and financial elite, as is the right. So, they just represent different memes, and they, I don't know, if I would say now about Brian Cox, I would say it was Joe Cox, I'm sorry, not Brian Cox. Who's Brian Cox?
Brian Cox.
Is that a singer?
Scientist.
Okay, I confused it. No, I just would say that for me, as a watcher of this vote, I was sure that Brexit would come, and I would suppose that this was just part of the theatrical engineering of intents and conflict in the society in order to create the remains after the vote. We have now nationalists and we have anti-nationalists. We have the same that we had in 1917 or something, after the First World War.
You might have two plans. Oh, the thing is... They might have had two plans going, that they wanted to try and get it. At the end of the day, I knew, another part of the reason why I voted leave was because I know there's no way that we're going to leave, and the way to prove that we're not going to leave is by everybody...
By leaving, by trying to leave.
Leave them, we don't leave. That's proof, I can't say this one onion skin reason why I left, but it wasn't because I hate Europeans. I can tell you that now. In fact, I thought the best thing that could happen to Europe is to get rid of the UK, because we're a pain in the arse.
No, it's the opposite. You know, all these treaties that they have and the contracts and blah, 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 it's very similar to Switzerland. Switzerland is not part of the Eurozone and also not part of the European Union. And they have several hundreds of thousands of special agreements for this and that and blah, 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 protection of loans and protection of working times and whatever. There is no harm either way. And I believe that it wouldn't make any difference if it would be another outcome, you know, because the level of, yeah, the difference is for the people. You cannot travel from England, you cannot travel to Europe and just stay in Germany and work. That will be a difference afterwards.
I'll tell you something interesting, and you know how it panned out, because Remain didn't win. But in the run-up to... the Brexit vote. This is probably, I don't know, maybe, I don't know if it started before the Brexit. It probably did start before it. But they were floating the idea that Westminster is falling to pieces. You know, that's where the elections take place. That there's all chunks of everything falling out. And then they were floating the idea, this is before Brexit, that Parliament needed to leave. And it needed to leave, you know, the act, you know, where everything takes place. It needs to move out of Westminster for at least 6 years for renovation purposes. And they were floating that all the way up. And I have a feeling that is... Because if you look at the treaties and what it says, and Parliament would go, if you follow the letter of the law, what the treaties say, the British Parliament would go, everything would be transferred to local bodies that go to, you know, local, there's like 12 local regions.
Regional, yeah, okay.
Yeah, regions that go straight to Europe. I have a feeling that, and I can't prove this because it didn't happen, but say the Remain one, I reckon that they would have pushed that through and Parliament would have left. And in that breakup, because you break the whole tradition of the, you know, state opening a Parliament, the blah, 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 that wouldn't take place. That's 6 years to forget that process, and then there'd be a delay, and then that would be maybe 8 years, 10 years, and then I reckon it would never go back. But when Brexit won, all of those stories stopped. And it's funny, it's only recently I've heard that kicked, oh, we need to leave Parliament.
Okay. So it was a threatening story, let's say.
Well, no, I don't think it's a threatening. It's putting it in the consciousness. Not for that. I'm not saying it's putting it in that consciousness that they want us to know. It's just, I just find it interesting that they were pushing that, you know, not in a big way. They were just pushing it in the news.
Yes, I understand.
You know, so it became a subconscious narrative that Westminster has fallen up, you know, this is falling apart, it needs renovating.
But it is actually a little bit like contrasting. So it would mean if you vote for Remain, everything will fall apart.
Well, no, I think it's more that if the true agenda is to just have a European Parliament across Europe, having the one Parliament, get rid of all of the other parliaments, and that's part, then what you've got to do is break tradition of this. Of Parliament, because that happens every set. You've got to break that. How do you break that? You move Parliament out of Westminster.
Yeah. Well, you are on the island there, but just to inform you, nobody in Europe wants a European Parliament. Everyone hates the European Parliament.
But the point of the European Parliament is the way it's set up with its... You can't get... There's no... As I keep saying, there's no way of voting out Nigel Farage. There's just no way of voting him out, because... You aren't. You vote for a party. You don't vote for a person. Yes. So the party chooses the person. It's a false democracy. You know, they sell that PR proportional representation as something good, but it's not. I mean, I'm not saying that.
It's a monster. The European construction is a monster, a bureaucratic nightmare.
Yeah. But I can't say. What I'm saying about the British Parliament is true. All I can say is it exists and it fits a different narrative. And all the time I try and get rid of, I think, oh, it can't be that because of this. And then I think, you know, you look into think and you think, I can't cross it off because there's a door there that suggests that is actually what they're going to do. And as I say, if what it says in the treaty is true, and the British Parliament would be taken apart. Well, first of all, if most of the people over the last, say, three parliaments have been replaced by actors, then it's very easy to get rid of the actual politicians, because they don't actually exist now.
You have such an hypothesis that the whole parliament there is actors? It could be, I don't know. I know that the Greek is not.
I'm not saying all of them. I'm saying percentage of them. And every election, you could grow that percentage. So over 15 years, how many people are actually not in the pay of? Again, it's a hypothesis. You think, well, that's a crazy hypothesis, and then you see this thing in the news.
Well, they are all controlled, that's for sure. But
you leave Parliament for 6 years, and you think it fits that narrative that they're already getting rid of the people.
It's really insane.
It's a crazy narrative.
I think as I said, it is a matter of how much control is needed for pursuing, or how is it called, for pushing the agendas. I personally believe that in the main worldwide powers as China is, as the United States are, England, Germany, France, etc., the control is almost complete. That means there is nothing that is not controlled on the highest level of producing public opinion and policies and international relations. Everything is controlled there. And there is no free decision. And all these people that are representing or embodying these characters in public are more or less artificial. Either they are characters that are controlled and through financial means or family boundaries or whatever, or they are complete artificial. I cannot exclude it that some of those people are complete. For example, you know, you don't have to be a robot in order to be a complete artificial character. What is the difference between Alec Baldwin and Donald Trump? They're just a different part of the set. So, you know, and they also play different roles. Maybe it's the same person who plays them. I don't know.
I think the problem, if you look from the problem, maybe the controllers have with certain aspects of American, Canadian, British, and Australian law is to do with, I mean, you can't say that the civil law isn't part of it, but there's certain, you know, this, if you read the Free Man on the Land movement and stuff like that, it's about,
you don't know that, what's that?
The, you know, learning about the rights that they had and taking them back. And from that point of view, to kill these particular nations' ability to sort of like to pull back from, you know, to inherent rights and things like that, I think that may be that might be an area why
I think, you know, that's an
interesting topic for me, but probably not for you.
No, it's interesting. It's interesting. I'm not quite sure if I understand everything, because sometimes I don't know all the things that you are mentioning. But what I was thinking now is, you know, the transition, the nation state is also an artifice. It's not a natural thing. The nation state that was that erupted in the 18th century or late 1750 or whatever. Pardon?
That's still corporate. If you're looking at common law isn't corporate, it's inherent rights. It comes from the Bible. That's really, I mean, we say common law, but it comes from a time, from the rights of the Bible and the belief in God being the supreme power.
And do you have in England common law? I have never heard that again, common law.
It's the basis of, I mean, yeah, everything like every.
It's what others call natural law. Is that it?
Every proper crime in Britain is dealt under common law. So if you murder somebody, it is dealt under common law. But you also have civil law matters that are completely fraud-related stuff. You know, it's about money. It's about taking people money off people. I mean, part of the you know, the police. You know, in Britain, I think in Canada, well, no, I don't know about Canada, I think in Australia they do, they wear a black and white checkerboard, and I think that's got to do, that has definitely got to do with law and legislation, because they are different sides of a coin. It's interesting. I don't really want to get into here, but it is really interesting, and it's a different fight to what Central Europe has, because it's not part of Central Europe. You've got a different law system, but it's just interesting. You know, you might have people fighting. You might have the perspective of Scottish people and English people having a fight over being European or not being European. Mm-hmm. But there's quite a lot of kinmanship in the idea of a supreme law. That comes from somewhere that is bigger than everybody.
Mm-hmm. So, but that doesn't have any legislatory power anymore.
Yeah, no, it does. All criminal law in this country is under common law.
Yes.
All criminal law. So every proper law, but like that, police, you know, the speeding ticket fines and things like that are all civil law. But proper, if you murder somebody, you will be charged under, it's a common law. It's a common law crime. Any criminal, anything serious
so,
dealt by.
Just to understand that the common law is the same as criminal law.
It's your 12 jury. You have under common law. You are innocent until you're proven guilty.
Yes,
you have a right. You have a right to a trial for 12 people chosen from your peers. You have a right to be tried in your own jurisdiction. You know, in your own area, which is interesting about the whole terrorism thing, because when Thomas May, apparently the murderer of Joe Cox, he should have been tried in Bidstill, in whatever the big Crown Court in Yorkshire was, because that's your right, is to be tried and be having the jury of your peers. But because they classed it as an act of terrorism, they tried him in London. That's not due process. There's a due process in British law to do with common law, and when you start exerting,
so you have a state of exception in this specific case.
It's an exception because it was classed as terrorism, and you can see why they've created this whole category of terrorist law. It's fake law. It's fake stuff, so they can put it in a trial and it's a stage show. It's once you start looking into the law side, you can see why they want us to be in Europe, because common law will be taken away, it will be dismantled, be replaced.
You know, that's now interesting, maybe also for you to compare with your English their situation. I'm living in Switzerland, and we have a 25th of November. We have a, what is it called when all the people are asked to vote? Is it
general election?
Yes, general votation.
Election,
it's this basic democratic that they have here in Switzerland, and we are called to vote for the suspension of all international law conventions. For example, the Convention of Human Rights, or the Convention, or the Declaration of Human Rights is the correct term, I think. The Declaration of Human Rights, or other international law that is accepted by most of the countries in the world. We are called to vote for the suspension of that.
Is that European, or is that UN?
Also European law. We are called to suspend all other laws except the national ones. And that's, of course, also not okay. You know, so you don't have any declaration of human rights afterwards.
I know that I'm not clear on human rights law. I know there's European human rights, but there's also the United Nations have their own declaration.
I think there is only this one. There is no European Declaration for Human Rights.
Yeah,
it's the United Nations.
Yeah, there is a European one, because Article...
Is there? Okay.
Yeah, Article 1, because this is part of the thing I used to like showing. There was Article 1 where it says you have a right to life, and then you have a fundamental right to life, and then you look at the, you know, dot thingy bobs, you know, a couple of pages later, which is the asterisk, and then it tells you where the government can legally kill you without interfering with your right to life. And one of them is anything that insurrection, what's it? what's the definition of an insurrection? Saying I don't agree with the outrage.
Insane, really. I didn't say that till now because we are in the discussion already, but I am absolutely no fan of all these systems of right, you know. I don't believe in something like rights. I believe in negotiations and in cooperation, and I believe there are parts of life that are not under these category of the of so what does that mean, right to life?
Right.
Who declares that? Only God can declare that if there is one. You know, I think that's Hebrews.
Under common law, it's against the law to take somebody else's life. And that's all you need. You're not allowed to take somebody else's life. That's all you need. You don't need to say you have a right to life unless you do this, this, and this, and then the government can legally kill you.
That's really insane. Yeah. Yeah. But now I remember now you're right. Declaration, European Declaration of Human Rights. That is some form I've heard of.
I've got it. I've saved it off their site where it says it gives you Italy. But that's it. That's the last one is insurrection, which is basically a cover all.
You know, for me, the Ten Commandments would be sufficient as law. Maybe even eight of them, not ten. Two are not so nice, I think.
The common law isn't actually the Ten Commandments. It came, and people who are into the sort of like the ecclesiastical sort of like law will tell you why common law isn't the Ten Commandments, but it's sort of like the idea is there's things that are wrong and they're based on what. You know, and that's what's wrong. And then basically, if you don't fall in the category of this is wrong, you're not allowed to steal from proper people, you're not allowed to hurt people, you're not allowed to kill them, you're not allowed to, you know.
And
basically, that's all the set of laws that you need, the things that you're not allowed to do, and then you can do whatever else.
But you know, that's now an important detail, that in the Ten Commandments, it is not articulated, you are not allowed. It is don't. It's an imperative. Because even the, let's say, whatever outer space, God or religion or whatever level of existence is not actually in a position to allow or disallow you something. You always are responsible yourself. But God has the ability to say, don't, you know. I find it very human like that.
It's
very
fine.
Good. Yeah.
In British law, when the death penalty was in place, so the death penalty, if you murdered somebody else under the old law, you forfeited your life. So the death penalty was in place for murder. But if you were found guilty and you used to get hanged, if it failed three times, then you were acquitted. Because it was deemed as an act
of God. It was God's will. But something funny I remember now, somewhere I read that in England, the death penalty was in craft, or how is it called, was actual till 1854, for those who were telling the weather of the next day or the next week. It was forbidden because it was actually, they categorized it as witchcraft. It was witchcraft and it became the death penalty. Rachel, it was really great to talk with you and to be here again.
Yes.
I have to leave now.
I've nearly got a sore throat from talking now.
Okay. But I'm learning your dialect now.
I think I've got a bit of a rubbish headset. My other one got broken. I must have leaned on it, I think. So I'll have to see what this sounds like, because it might sound bad.
No, it sounds good. And just learning the dialect, you know, because you have a special dialect.
Yeah.
So thank you, and see you again later. Bye-bye, Rachel.
Okay,
Bye, everybody.
This is Noise Level, Perth, WA, and you're listening to Fake Collars Radio at fakecollars.com.